Hey guys, it's Mitchell.
And Jay.
We're both here. Before we start this episode of Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast, we just wanted to take a second to talk about, I guess, what's going around the country, which is the Black Lives Matter movement. I don't know what to say about this.
Well, it's blanking. Hard. And we can keep this in if you want, or if you want to start over, it's totally fine. We don't have all the answers to what's going on right now. And we didn't put out an episode last week, obviously in solidarity with what was going on, because, we are very much, in support of what's happening. And, you know, we think, you know, obviously, police brutality is wrong, and you know things need to be done. And
it's also like I just couldn't do it last week,
right?
Like, absolutely. I couldn't get in the headspace of like, oh yeah, I want to talk about this like old show that's just about rich white people. Like, that's not what anybody wants to hear right now. It's certainly not what I want to talk about right now. So instead, you know, I spent the week, you know, learning, reading, watching, listening. I donated as much money as I could to, we live in Atlanta. So if you're in Atlanta, the Atlanta Solidarity Fund will help, any protesters that get unlawfully arrested, out of jail so they can get back on the streets. I've been, you know, learning about black-owned businesses, learning about systemic racism, which it's like you hear that and you think you've got a handle on what it is, but it's a much like deeper problem, and it's much more ingrained in American history than I ever knew. And I'm glad we're talking about it now. I'm glad that it's like up on the surface, and I feel like change is on the way. I see it happening little by little, and I'm grateful for that. But it's still like, we still got a long road ahead of us. But
yeah, and we started doing this during the coronavirus. We were like, let's do a podcast, and that way we can take our minds off being quarantined and not being able to live our lives normally. And we... now we're faced with this, with the police brutality and the Black Lives Matter, and we're not trying to take our minds off of it.
It's very much at all something. Like, yes, I do not want to take my mind off of.
Yeah, it needs to be talked about, and it needs to be something that we're all aware of and working towards, and doing whatever we can, whether it's protesting or donating or just gaining more knowledge about this stuff, because yeah, we're two white guys who consider ourselves good people, and then you know you look inwardly a little bit and you realize that we all kind of have contributed to this, and we have to do better, and we have to change how our outlook on stuff and how we address things. And yeah, and so that's kind of where we are right now. You know, we're gonna do better, and I think we all need to.
Yeah, and since you're listening to this, and you might be a fan of the format of this podcast and what it's all about, we thought we'd recommend a few black hosted podcasts that or black centric podcasts that. That one that I have on the list here. Okay. I have two podcasts on the list. One is That's a list. It's a list. The first podcast we'd like to recommend is called Castle Black. It's by For All Nerds. For All Nerds is a really cool, like, podcast channel. You can check them out on Stitcher or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. But they do like episodes about all kinds of pop culture things, and it's kind of a different thing every week, but it's all from that black perspective, which is beneficial. And it's like it's really cool to kind of hear that perspective in relation to Game of Thrones. Castle Black is a series that they did in like mid-2019. So if you're digging this show, I highly recommend you go check out Castle Black, because it's exactly what this show is, but it's like kind of a review of Game of Thrones from
about an actual really good show.
Yeah. Well, the first 5 or 6 seasons of it, at least. But it's great. The hosts are awesome. It's a really fun listen, and you learn a bit about kind of like representation and stuff. And I know it's like a fantasy world that they live in, but a lot of these issues of like oppression and stuff come up in the show, and they discuss that as well. And it's interesting to hear it from a different perspective than your own, or from the showrunners, who were also two white dudes. There's another podcast I recommend called Code Switch. It's an NPR podcast, and it is focused around race and culture. So if you're just looking to learn more about what Black Lives Matter means and what's like going on in our country right now, I think that's a great source, because you're getting different perspectives again from kind of all sides looking at this problem. And I think like hearing people's personal stories is the best way to relate to something, for you to come to an understanding of something. So, you know, if you just like look at the news and like whatever they represent and whatever they're spitting at you, it's really easy to form like a kind of a polarized opinion, whichever way you lean, when you see that, because it's a narrative that's being pushed. But I think when you hear personal stories from people who are directly affected by these things, then that kind of like, that kind of helps you connect on a human level with them. And I think it'll just help if you're looking to try and make sense of this all and trying to find some understanding in it. It's a good place to start. There's also a couple apps, and well, one app and one website we'd like to recommend. The first is Eat Okra. It's an app that it's like a pretty comprehensive list of Black owned restaurants that you can order from. So if you're like me and you're too lazy to cook a lot of the time, you want to order Uber Eats. And I think Uber Eats just added an option to order from Black owned restaurants nearby you. With like they figured out that
delivery
algorithm.
Charge, right?
No delivery charge. It's like super cool. But Eat Okra was around first. So if you want to check out that one, it might be a more comprehensive list than Uber Eats. I'm not sure. I haven't looked into it. And there's also WeBuyBlack.com. This is a massive list of Black owned businesses that you can shop for like pretty much anything online for. Yeah. So we just wanted to make those recommendations before we start our show. And we're just going to do the show like normal. Just because, you know, I don't know. I feel like it would be hard to work this into the narrative of the OC because it's
right.
It's such a dated show, and it's from such a very narrow perspective.
Yeah, but like we said, we're not ignoring what's going on, and we're doing what we can to you know, be better and be more knowledgeable. And we thanks you guys for listening, and we encourage you to also seek knowledge and help out because Black Lives Matter,
and that's what Sandy Cohen would do,
and that's what Sandy Cohen would do. Cool. Well, thank you for listening, and here is the episode.
Previously on Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast.
I just want Sandy to walk outside and go like, get out of the way. And he just picks up all the groceries.
He picks up the car. Like, it feels like he got out of the hospital, went to like the gift shop in the hospital.
Of the hospital!
And then he found a bear with a heart on it. He's like, boom, got it.
After like 8 to 10 seconds of just like sadly staring at him. She goes, you're too late.
You're too late. You blew it, man. It's time for Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast. Okay.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast. My name is Jay. His name is Mitchell.
Hey.
We are two best friends who have decided to rewatch The OC and to have a podcast where each episode we talk about an episode of The OC. And man, oh man, Mitchell, we're on episode 7.
And finally,
I hope you packed your bags because my Range Rover is ready and we are heading to Tijuana.
Woo! To TJ.
The TJ. Oh, who's that third voice I hear, Jay?
I was going to say, I don't know if you noticed, but in the back seat of my Range Rover, I brought a guest along because this is a big episode. This is in the, when you think of season one OC episodes, there's a few that just immediately pop into your mind. And this is one of them. And so we thought, even though Mitchell and I are two of the most well-respected OC scholars in the nation, nay, the planet, we thought we might need one more person just to help us unpack everything and really dissect this episode. And I'm so very, very excited that our good buddy is here to help us. He is the host of Let's Make a Podcast. He is my co-host on my high school iPod. He runs Kitty Wing Productions. He's a wonderful human. He's one of my very best friends in the world. Welcome to the show, Muhammad Joma.
Thank you for having me. Runs Kitty Wing Production is a very loose term. I do very little work to keep it afloat these days.
You have a team of how many people running that podcast company?
Well, there's me, and, you know, really, there's you two now, too, because you guys do all the work on this podcast, and I just release it.
Well, you pay us well, so.
Yeah, it's an honor and a pleasure. Thanks for keeping the lights on. Muhammad. Yeah,
I'm excited to be here, guys.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Virtually, of course, still quarantined. But how you doing?
I'm good, man. I mean, it's been a rough emotional week for everybody. You know, I've been doing a lot of, you know, it's been a rough, honestly, it's been a rough year, and it's been a rough, you know, few decades for a huge portion of America. So, you know, but it's been very emotional, I think, over the last couple weeks.
Definitely.
But I'm doing good, man. I'm you know, quarantining. I'm taking some time to be inward and focus on myself and try to be a better person, like I think a lot of people are.
I think it's good. Yeah, I imagine, I don't know if this is true, but I'm going to try to make some sort of analogy. So just hang in there. So like when a butterfly comes out of its cocoon, right? Yeah. I imagine that's like,
you. I got you okay, so far.
Are you with me? It's kind of I imagine that's kind of a painful process. It's like,
right. Its wings are spreading for the first time.
Stretching
like,
them
have
out.
Have you seen?
All the bones are cracking. It's like,
yeah, have you seen that Planet Earth when they show the butterflies coming out of the cocoons and they're just screaming?
Yeah, they put a little microphone on them and they're like, oh, God.
Blood is squirting out everywhere out of the cocoon. And like human blood.
David Attenborough is like, listen to the butterflies as they scream in pain.
This is necessary for them to live a new life. But that's what I was, it's like, it feels like this is kind of the painful beginning of like a step in the right direction in our country, finally. And
yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, it is emotional and it's rough. And it's like, it's a very hard pill to swallow for a lot of people, but it's a necessary one. So like, mm-hmm. I'm just looking forward to, you know, spreading them wings, baby.
Not to focus on it too much, but there does seem to be some progress finally, I would say, in the movement. Mm-hmm. Some positive progress. So, you know, it has been very emotional, but there's, you know, a lot to be hopeful for right now. So
definitely, man. Well, Muhammad, how are you feeling about the OC? What's your history with this show?
So we've been friends for a long time, the three of us, and my history with the OC before this podcast started was that I knew that you guys liked the OC.
That's it?
That's it.
and you never watched it, despite our high praise of it?
I never watched a single episode until the first episode of this show came out, and then I started watching along.
It's been an
interesting journey.
So do
and
you,
I gotta say,
yeah,
I'm all in. I love it. I'm a fan. Yeah,
cool, man.
I mean, it is. It's exactly what you guys, you know, you guys have talked about it before on the show. It is cheesy mid-2000s. You call it a soap opera, primetime soap opera, which is very accurate, but also, is that what they called it? Is that what the genre is?
No,
we're working on a patent trademark for that.
I don't think I watched any show like this ever. I mean, then for sure. Like, as I got older, I mean, within the last few years, I've watched some, you know, maybe some like cheesy sitcom, like a couple episodes of Grey's Anatomy, a couple episodes here and there, you know, stuff like that.
Sure, that's
just
comparable.
In passing. Yeah. But yeah, it's because I'm older and I can appreciate garbage TV. When this show came out, and even through my 20s, I would always just be like, who the fuck watches that besides Jay and Mitchell?
we were screaming to no one about how much we love that. No one was listening. Right.
Now you have a whole audience to scream to.
Maybe.
But it's been, I mean, watching it through the lens of, it's interesting because I'm watching it while listening to the podcast. I watched the episode before I listened to the podcast episode.
Okay.
But I'm watching it kind of through you guys' eyes, even as I'm watching them for the first time, like, trying to put myself in your shoes in your, what, early 20s or late teens when you guys are watching this?
Yeah, late teens probably. I think we were freshman, sophomore, and
yeah, I imagine it was a fun thing. I mean, you guys watched them all together, right? I mean, you weren't just like,
yeah, we've said in a previous episode, I think it might be like the first show aside from maybe like Family Guy or something that I like binged, that I like like bought the box set DVDs and,
oh well, it was prime DVD buying era.
Yes,
by the
absolutely
way,
absolutely.
Like, I watched all of Scrubs because they had those DVDs real cheap. Not because I loved the show. I mean, it's not a bad show.
Yeah.
But I watched all of it just because you could. And Entourage 2, which is a bad show. But I watched every fucking episode because you could find those box DVDs used for very cheap. And, you know, that was like, you know, early or mid-2000s cutting cable, too. Like, I was, like, you know, broke and just not having cable in my house.
Sure.
And streaming services weren't really a thing yet. So, yeah, I'd buy cheap used box DVDs from, like, Movie Stop or Blockbuster or whatever. And, watch a shitload of shows like that. So I could.
Those DVDs would take up so much fucking space. Like, yeah, they were always like 7 or 8 inches thick.
Right.
Just like Frasier. Or like, it was just so many. And like, yeah, if you liked like 4 shows, that took up like a whole shelf of your DVD collection. It was just like, yeah, these huge boxes, which I can, it makes sense that you would find them used because a lot of those shows, like, how many times would you actually watch them? Like,
right. Yeah, I also sold a lot of, like, resold them.
There was a whole market for it. Because, there were whole stores dedicated to, like, come in, trade in your DVDs, get some
You know, that's how The Office really blew up, by the way. Like, The Office wasn't the American Office wasn't, like, a super popular show in its first 3 seasons, even.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember Family Guy's like that, too, because Family Guy came back because everybody was buying those DVDs and passing
it got
around.
Canceled. It got canceled after
it got canceled.
Like 1 or 2 seasons or something. And then
I remember the 3rd season of The Office is like when everybody was showing it. David Marsh showed it to me, but just like different people were bringing those DVDs around. And like suddenly it was like a talk of a town, but it's not like people were watching them. I guess it's kind of like what Netflix does now, or Hulu, or whatever. Like, shows become popular once they move to those streaming services because everybody can watch them, and then there could be a conversation about them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The cream rises, baby. Like, no matter what the popular medium is, whether it's basic cable or DVDs or Netflix, like, The Office is always going to do well because it's a great show.
Right. Let me ask you guys. So when you were watching The OC then, I mean, you were watching them because you could get them on DVD and, you know, but were you enjoying them in the same kind of fun, let's talk about, I don't want to say ironically because that's just hacky, but right. Was it like a fun thing to watch and kind of shit talk and kind of play around with, or were you guys just really invested in these, let's face it, mostly poorly written characters?
Yeah, I think we came into it with a little of that cynicism, a little of that,
sure,
you know, early aughts teenage irony, but right. I think, well, like, as we watched the show, as we like got deeper and deeper into these characters and like kind of like latched on and fell in love with them, I think, like, but I know that when we watched the finale of this show together, like, you and I like cried our eyeballs out, like, we genuinely genuinely loved this show. Yeah. Even though, yeah, I think by the fourth season, like, we were really into it, like, foot on the gas pedal, like, all the way with The OC, and we knew that, like, it had bad episodes. We knew that, like,
sure,
it wasn't great or perfect or anything, but I think we just,
well, that's
felt
the,
like,
era of TV it came out in too. There's like so many good shows just had a ton of bad episodes anyway,
because they had to, like, get through fucking like 25 episodes, yeah, a season. Like, it was, yeah, a,
there's so
lot,
many episodes in a season.
Like, the only, I didn't watch a lot of TV in that era, but the one that I did watch a lot of and was very into, and, you know, was watching them as they came out, was Lost.
Yeah, also Lost was a big one too.
But Lost is the same way, where it's like, there's so much to love about Lost, but it's largely just a bad show. Like, it's got a lot of problems. Storytelling, oh, yeah, wise, it goes in circles. It makes no sense. The characters aren't always super consistent.
Yeah.
You know, because it was just, that's how TV was then. They kind of didn't really maybe have a complete plan for the whole way through, or, you know, different writers come in and just make choices for characters and then they kind of just roll with it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. There was less attention paid to the serialization of the show.
The so overall, like, the arc.
Right, like the character. This is why Breaking Bad is so good, because the, mm-hmm, Walter White, Jesse Pinkman, right, arc throughout the entire show is like very consistent and constantly,
like,
fascinating.
Lost. Sorry. I didn't,
yeah, go ahead.
Interrupt.
Go ahead.
I do that.
That's okay.
You're shows our guest. Like, go ahead.
Yeah.
Shows like Lost and even The OC and other shows that were coming out in this era were kind of paving the way for that, because pre this era of TV, shows were like not serialized at all, really. And when they were, it was just, you know, very small storylines that kind of would take a very, like, you know, it'd just be a storyline in which a couple got together that would last, you know, 40 episodes. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
it wasn't a complex arc. It was just like, well, we'll make them slowly get together over the series of the show or whatever the story is. But for the most part, it was just one-off episodes, you know, and that's what worked for that time because of, you know, syndication and other things and not any way to rewatch TV largely. So.
Right, yeah, and I think that's a big part of the shift, is that you can binge stuff now. You can go back and, yeah, you don't have to, like, be on the couch Sunday night, 8 o'clock, no matter what. Like, this is your one chance to watch the next episode, right, of this show.
Yeah, you just missed it if you didn't watch
it. It's gone.
And it was okay, because next week, Sam and Diane were still going to do their whole cat and mouse thing, and, you know, Cliff and Norm were going to be fun and chummy, and oddly, like, weirdly kind of depressing, like, the fact that Norm's always running away from his wife to go to the bar.
Yeah.
But often they wouldn't, you know, even touch upon major storylines from previous episodes where you're
right,
like,
yeah,
well, what happened to that girl that that whoever was in love with, you know, I don't know if Norm ever had a girlfriend or something, but you know what I mean? It's like, wait a minute. I thought that was like a big moment for that character where they were like, okay, this is like a real step in the right direction. And then they never talk about it again.
just rinse your hands of it. And then whatever happens next week happens. So, cool. Well, do you want to get into this episode? Do you want to dig in?
Yeah, let's do it.
I would love to.
Here we go. I know the show is usually 3 hours, and I might delay that a little bit.
I'm gonna try and clip through it a little quicker so we can have more of these digressions.
Cool.
So we jump in episode 107, The Escape. We start with a previously on, as we always do. I noticed that this previously on is 100% about Marissa and the Coopers. Like every scene that they show, every little like bit of dialogue that they show, like directly addresses something that's going on with Marissa. Like whether it's Luke and Ryan's love triangle thing with her, or Julie and Jimmy's like marital problems and their financial problems, like whatever we see here, it's all related to Marissa. So one can only assume this is going to be a Marissa heavy episode.
Mm-hmm.
And story-wise, I mean, it is. Like, all the characters have equal time, and they're all there, but the story really is revolving around her and what she's going through in this episode.
Yeah, and as we know already at this point, the dramatic final act of this episode is entirely about Marissa. So we start the episode in the Coens' kitchen, as we normally do. I love that they start every episode for a long time. A lot of these episodes, I think, is it all of them? From the,
a lot
off the
of
top
them
of my
start
head.
In the kitchen around breakfast time.
Yeah.
And there's usually the same music in the background playing. It's like that kind of like plucky string, like bloom, 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 bloom.
Yeah, this show usually starts with kind of a
music.
Fun,
it's the
jaunty
breakfast theme, yeah.
Like, unless there was a particularly like heavy ending on the previous episode. For the most part, the opening scene's going to be fun. It's going to be breakfast. It's going to be fun. So we start with Ryan and Seth in the kitchen. Do you know the term greeking, Muhammad? Like if you greek something on set? So like when you shoot a commercial or something, you get talent to come. They bring their own shoes or whatever, and there's a Nike swoosh on it. Well, we don't have permission to use the shoes, so we have to greek it, right? So we put like gaffer tape over it that's the same color.
Sure.
I noticed
on reality
why
TV.
Is it called greeking? Do you know that?
I don't know, man. The terms they use in the industry, like there's no telling where they come from. Like C-47s are clothespins.
Whatever. So they don't list a giant budget for clothespins on their line items.
Apple boxes cannot hold apples. Go figure.
No.
But the first thing I noticed is Ryan's always eating like dry cereal out of the box. That's his thing.
Oh yeah.
And he has a box of Cap'n Crunch, but they greeked out Cap'n Crunch, like the big text that takes up 1/3 of the box.
They didn't
is
just
completely
put gaff tape on it though, right?
They like printed over it or whatever. Like it looks legit, but there's like no title.
Like
they didn't replace it with first mate Chewy or whatever. Like it's just blank, completely blank, the first third of that
but
box.
It still has the picture of Captain Crunch on it, just not
it does
the,
have yes
the text.
It does have the mascot Captain Crunch, but just not the words.
That's wild.
Cool.
It's gonna be a long episode, guys.
I was gonna say in a previous episode when he's eating cereal, I remember that I don't think that they did greek it, and I think it was like Fruit Loops or something. And
yeah, I wonder
like,
if they
oh,
got in trouble with Kellogg's or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's this episode in particular, since there's a lot of underage drinking and stuff that's going on. Captain Crunch was like,
Ryan eating their cereal. They were like, that's not what Kellogg stands for.
He's from the wrong side of the tracks.
That felon
from Chino
eats our cereal.
This is also why in later seasons they just eat bagels for breakfast, because there's no brands on bagels.
No, sir. That makes a lot of sense. Plus, you get the schmear.
My bagels are stamped with their brand on them.
Branded bagels.
Yeah.
So Ryan's eating his greeked Cap'n Crunch. Seth is trying to talk Ryan into going to Tijuana. Right. Instead of Comic-Con. Comic-Con is this weekend. Now, Comic-Con in 2003 wasn't what it is now.
It's still very nerdy.
That's what I was wondering. Like, in my mind, first of all, I was like, I wish there was an episode because I'd love to see Ryan at Comic-Con.
Yeah. He says, that would have been why fun. Can't we go to Comic-Con? And I was thinking like, why can't they? That would be awesome. That'd be a great episode.
He reads Legion and Batman and different DC shit. Like, he's into comics now.
Right. And when Ryan says it, it does sound a little legit. Like, he's not just like, come on, why don't we just not? Or he's like, why can't we go to Comic-Con? I was like, yeah.
He's like, Bendis is going
to
be there.
Seth has gotten to go his entire life. Ryan never got to experience it.
I just love, like, the idea of Ryan awakening as, like, a nerd. Like, now that he's, like, in a comfortable house and he has access to comics and stuff, he's like, holy shit, this shit is dope.
It's great.
He's like, I really want to go to Comic-Con. And like simultaneously Seth is like having his like adolescent sexual awakening whatever, and so he's like, no, we gotta go to Tijuana and party, and Ryan's like, no, I'm trying to get away from that life. I just want to be tired of having sex.
Definitely what's happening in that scene.
I
thought it was a little strange that Seth was trying to talk Ryan into going to Tijuana. Like, the motivation from Seth, I guess, is all hinging upon the kiss that Summer gave him in the last episode.
Yeah, he's got some form. His first kiss, and he's now got a taste for it.
He's like,
he's got some form of momentum going, you know? Yeah. He's like, yeah, this he's got to keep that ball rolling with Summer.
All right, I hear you, Seth. then Sandy and Kirsten enter. And Sandy's like, you excited for Comic-Con? So the whole time, Sandy and Kirsten, they know, like, every year Seth goes to Comic-Con. It's this weekend. But Seth's trying to sneak away to Tijuana under the guise of, like, oh, yeah, we're just going to Comic-Con like I always do. But
you know, I thought it was strange that they were lying because... Nobody else in that community, they all were going to Tijuana. All the kids were, and nobody else was lying.
I thought that too, but then later on when Marissa is telling, you know, her dad that she's leaving, and he's, oh, no, wait, because he goes, oh, for Palm Springs?
But she says, like, no.
She corrects him. Yeah.
And he goes, no, Tijuana. Yeah.
That's just Jimmy being an idiot like he always is.
It kind of puts out there that maybe Seth's parents are more strict than the other parents, but
aside from Comic-Con, Seth hasn't, like, he went to that party with Ryan. That was like his first time going to a party. Seth is a little bit of a
sweet soft boy, and they know it. but also, like, Jimmy knows his daughter's going to Tijuana, so this lie is not going to work out for Seth and Ryan. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way that their parents won't know that all the kids in town went to Tijuana. You know what I mean?
Well, it would, except Marissa went and, you know, took a bunch of pills and...
Okay, but let's not get ahead of ourselves, but Sandy sees Marissa and Summer getting into the car with Seth and
Ryan. We'll get there, guys.
Okay.
We'll get there. We'll talk
about it. Just saying, it's a bad lie.
No, you're absolutely right.
Pointless lie.
And I will say that a lot of Seth's harebrained schemes don't ever really pan out.
He doesn't think them out too much.
He's not that mastermind he thinks he is. Yeah. So Sandy's dressed in a very nice suit. And Seth's like, oh, big pimpin', what you got going on? And Sandy reveals that he has a job interview at a private practice in town. And it's, I guess, something that happens sort of often with Sandy is because he's so damn good as a lawyer. But, you know, as we know, he's a public defender because he's got all the ideals and all the heart, but none of the money. So every once in a while, a private firm will reach out and say, like, hey, we'd like to interview you for a job. And Sandy sort of like agrees for the free lunch. There's a nice callback.
There's a callback joke that they make.
Mitchell's gonna love this.
Right. So,
but also, it's not really a callback.
It's confusingly not a callback. You're absolutely right, Muhammad. It's not a callback. So Sandy's like, oh, I'm going. I got this interview, and Ryan's like, you're not gonna like work for the man, are you? He's like, I go for the free meal, and yeah, then Ryan says, you're not going to take the job. And Sandy's like, oh, it'd have to be a hell of a free meal. And then Seth goes, that's called a callback, which it's not, because a callback has to happen much later. It's not like within the same conversation.
Within the same, like, there was about
there was like 15 seconds that passed. That's not long enough.
No.
He's literally referencing the thing he just said.
Yeah, like salt in his game, like that callback. That was a callback, because that was a previous episode that happened, and that's fantastic. But if it's like you have two lines in this scene and they're both about the free meal, that's not a callback.
And it's interesting because the show does so many callbacks.
I know
that you would think they would know what a callback was.
Well, maybe they do, but Seth doesn't. I don't know.
Maybe they consider anytime you repeat yourself a callback, but it's like the longer, it's like wine. It's like the more it ages, the more time that passes, the better that callback is.
100%.
That callback is.
So they ask when are you guys leaving? They ask, when are you guys leaving? And Ryan looks at Seth and he's like, tomorrow. And Seth goes, or mañana?
So yeah, he's really even like mumbles it too.
Yeah, he's even like funny. Saying it in the presence of his parents. Like, why is he saying mañana?
And then Kirsten goes, really "Are funny you guys delivery. Going to Tijuana?"
Wait a minute,
busted!
I really liked Seth. I like Adam Brody a lot as an actor. I knew him from The Ten for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting thing to know somebody from.
But he's really funny. Like, he's just a very funny actor.
Yeah.
And yeah, that line really got me. And it's not like it is a weird thing to say because, like you said, his parents are right there. But the way he kind of like mumbles and kind of throws it away really got me. He's like, or do you mean mañana? Like, and then boom, cut the credits.
Boom, yeah, let's go to opening credits. Yeah, his comedic timing is amplified because he does a lot of scenes with Ben McKenzie, who doesn't quite have the comedic chops.
Right.
So I think in contrast, he looks a lot funnier. I mean, he's definitely the funniest of the bunch, especially when he's next to Marissa. Oh, boy.
But also when he gets the last line in a scene, it almost like it's like a nice punctuation to the end of a
scene. Button. Yeah. So
and there's also a lot of like dynamic camera moves in that opening, like mm-hmm. handheld moves. I thought like he was kind of like the camera was kind of walking in between them at points.
The cinematography in this one in particular is, I feel like it's noticeable. I'm kind of curious.
It's just always interesting. Because the show, it's not like a bunch, it's enough to be noticed. Like you guys have said, in every episode, they do some things. Like a couple, like a scene that's like a little bit daring with the cinematography. But it's always confusing.
An artsy shot in this episode. There's a couple of them in this episode.
Yeah, oh, for sure. The last one in particular is like somebody was like really jerking themselves off. but it was just interesting to me to think like, somebody's, you know, the choices that are made, like, oh, this is like a fast, dynamic scene. Let's get a couple handheld shots in there. Let's move around the crowd a little bit. You know, I don't know.
Well, I wonder too, and we've talked about this in terms of like the actors kind of figuring out their character. Like at this point, this is episode 7. I'm assuming they shot them in order, but maybe not. But at this point, they've kind of gotten, you know, they're kind of realizing what the show is, you know, and maybe they're getting a little riskier, or maybe like, let's try something a little different to make this breakfast, you know, this kitchen scene a little more exciting. So,
yeah, I thought this episode in particular was felt very like, oh, well, they have their style. Like there was good moments of humor with good moments of drama. It was really well done.
I agree. This episode is seminal. It's whereas, you know, like previous episodes we've talked about are kind of throwaways, like the outsider and the girlfriend, even though they established, you know, Caleb and stuff. This one is one of the more iconic episodes of the OC. So we come back from commercial after the opening credits, and we're in the pool house with Ryan, and Seth enters. Seth's walking in with a sombrero. Racist. And a Spanish phrase book.
Yeah.
I noticed that Ryan says, like, when Seth hands him the sombrero, Ryan says, "I don't wear hats."
Which is true. Which you is never true. See him wear a hat in this show.
Never wears a baseball cap, nothing. I mean, he's got a nice head of hair.
He does.
So I wouldn't wear a hat either if I were him.
It'd be weird if he wore that sombrero for the entire episode.
Oh, especially the last shot at the end where he's carrying Marissa. Still wearing
it. I also imagine like Seth walking around this house with the sombrero and the Spanish phrase book, and his dad's like, I thought you were going to San Diego.
What are you cosplaying for this year? I want to rethink that costume.
Yeah. So Ryan's in his Crab Shack shirt. He's about to go to work. And I think the scene's really just like Seth being like, "Are you over Marissa? Because, you know, she's going to be there." And Ryan's like, "Yeah, I'm over her. Don't worry about it. Whatever." And then we smash cut to Marissa's bedroom, where she's kind of nice little finishing Ryan's sentence there.
It's great.
They do that really well in some, like, it's obviously something that they are doing on purpose, but it always lines up really nicely.
I think that's a Josh Schwartz move, because he's the show creator, but he also wrote this episode. And I feel like every episode where he gets the writer credit, we get more of those. We get those kind of like smash cuts or jump cuts. But yeah, so we go to Marissa's room. They're kind of saying the same thing. So Ryan's saying like, "Me and Marissa, it wouldn't work out." And then we cut to Marissa's room and she's like, "Yeah, me and Ryan, it wouldn't work out." She's in her room with Summer. And
painting their toenails.
Yeah, you know, getting ready for TJ.
Very girls' room of them.
And Summer inquires about Marissa and Luke's sexual escapades, which, you know, they had sex at the end of the previous episode. And that's
when she lost her virginity to Luke out of spite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always spite the best way to do that.
Yeah. You can tell that she's not crazy about how that all unfolded.
Yeah.
Well, you said escapades. Escapade. Can you have an escapade, like, singular? Because they just did it once, right?
You're right. It's just a one-time deal. Because
Summer says it's always better the second time.
Right, which she kind of asks about like what Luke's dick looks like.
Yeah, which I thought was
which
very
is
funny.
Really weird. I'm like, do
it's
people
got a
do
puka
that?
Shell necklace around it.
It's got a gun
high five in its bros.
It's got a gunshot wound in it. Yeah, and so she wants the details, and Marissa's like, "I don't want to talk about it." And she's like, "It sucked, didn't it?" And Marissa's just kind of like, because Marissa has a hard time communicating. She's just got so much going on.
This is her best friend.
I know, and she even has a hard time opening up to her.
This was one of those scenes where the dialogue like kind of felt cringy, but then I was also kind of like, well, this is... You know, you guys have kind of talked about this on the show before, but this is the kind of cringiness that teenagers talk with, where they think they're cool and mature, but really they just sound like children talking about dicks.
And I think it's a specifically telling of Summer, because you find out later in the show that spoiler alert, that she's a virgin.
She's
coming in here saying like,
she talks with a lot of confidence.
Yeah. Right, right.
But that's what I, honestly, like, I watched, like a few episodes of that show Euphoria on HBO, and it's a really good show. It's like really well made, but I always get bothered with shows like that because the teenagers talk like really cool adults, like really smart,
like
cool,
Aaron Sorkin
funny adults
wrote their lines.
I'm like, no, every teenager talks like fucking like they're trying to be cool. And that's what the OC feels like. It feels like kids who think they're cool talking. Summer in particular always sounds like she's talking like like out of a Cosmopolitan magazine or something, like ways to sound cool, you know what I mean?
100%. Yeah, I think that's something the show actually does very well. I mentioned in the previous couple episodes how whenever Luke has like a sex scene, it feels like very accurate to like how right. like teenagers would have sex, where like Holly gets up and she goes downstairs and Luke's like, I'll be there in a minute. I'll be right behind you. Like, yeah, he's got a boner.
And all his cool kind of goes out the window in those moments too.
Yeah.
Even you guys talked about it, I think last episode, when he came back after being shot and he's like making up with Ryan, but he sounds so weird about it. But I was like, yeah, because he's just a fucking awkward kid that's still trying to be like, I'm the cool guy, but this guy saved my life, kind of.
Right.
So he's like, thanks, bro. Yeah, we good. We good now. And I'm like, yeah, this guy doesn't know how to communicate his feelings.
Yeah, because he's been nothing but an asshole for the majority of his life.
right.
He doesn't know
how to. He goes back to being an asshole in this episode, which I was glad, because, you want somebody on the show that you're openly rooting against.
Yeah, and there are hints of, like, new Luke in this episode. Yeah. Obviously not in Tijuana, but, like, prior to that, when he's, like, going to the bait shop and he sees Ryan, and instead of just punching him, he, like, kind of waves at him.
Gives him a little wave and smile.
Yeah, and Ryan just kind of gives him a look like, what are you doing, dude? Summer's like, you gotta have sex again. That's the only way you're gonna, you know, start to enjoy it. You just got to do it more. You got to get on that pony or whatever, but ride him, cowboy. And then Marissa's like, my dad's here. And this is another good segue, because then we cut to Jimmy's office and he's on the phone with, I guess, like the leasing office of an apartment. What?
Real quick though, Marissa has told, remember, I think it was like the first or second episode where, like, Summer is trying on shirts and is just, like, in her bra.
Yes.
And she's like, Summer, my dad is here. Summer doesn't give a fuck if Jimmy Cooper is there or not. She's like, I'm just gonna do what I want. Marissa, I'm sure, says all the time, like, Summer, my dad is here. She's like, I don't care.
So I don't give a shit. Your dad's a loser. Yeah.
Also, yeah, she's just doing a, like, weird dance.
She's not saying like, you gotta fuck Luke again. Like, she's just like, she's like, giddy up, cowboy. I'm like, that's not that bad. So we go to Jimmy's office. He's on the phone and we hear Jimmy saying, you said the apartment would be ready by this weekend. Where am I supposed to stay? Don't apologize, just forget it. And he hangs up, and then he kind of shuffles papers, like there's a lot of like paper shuffling with Jimmy, where he's like not even really looking at anything. He's just like frustrated and just like flipping through.
The Jimmy grimace, where he's like,
Jimmy grimace.
So painful. For the listener, we're all doing Jimmy grimaces on Zoom right now.
Oh, it's painful to even imitate. So then Marissa and Summer enter Jimmy's office, and this is where Jimmy's like, you're going to Palm Springs this weekend or whatever, and she's like, no, we're going to Tijuana. He's with my boyfriend Luke. And Jimmy's just like, cool, yeah, Luke's a good kid, right, Summer? Luke's a good kid. Summer's just like,
killed me.
Yeah, dude.
Sure. It was so funny to me.
Yeah.
Because it didn't make much sense at all. Like, what was he doing in that moment? Why was he checking in with
Summer? I think that was just to show that
he's like frazzled.
His mind is all over the place right
now.
Yeah.
Like, he couldn't quite remember who Luke was, maybe. He was like, Luke. He's a good kid.
The guy that your daughter's been dating since fifth grade.
Sure. She's as confused about it as I was.
Yeah. Thanks, Summer, for
another very funny line. Summer really endeared herself to me in this. She's not great in this episode. She's actually pretty terrible.
Yeah.
But like, as a character, she really endeared herself to me. She's very funny.
You just wait. She's gonna slowly start winning you over.
I'm glad.
And by like the last season, you're rooting for her more than like any other character.
She seemed like such not a big character in the first episode, or maybe first two episodes even.
I'm wondering if she was supposed to be, or if it was one of those things
that
where
actress
like
just impressed them enough that they kept giving her more and more scenes and more dialogue.
Yeah,
well, they had Seth like always be in love with her, right, from the from the jump, like he was always into her. But then they introduce Anna for one episode, who's like perfect for Seth. But then they kind of write her out at the end of that episode.
She doesn't come back. Well, I mean, I guess she comes back eventually.
She says she's going sailing.
Yeah, so she comes back later.
Yeah, I don't know if that was intentional or if like that actor was like, I have another commitment, so I can't do, you know, the next 2 months of shooting. And they were like, that's fine, we'll just say you're sailing.
Yeah.
It works.
we'll just get rid of you for a few episodes and then bring you back.
Since you're a figment of Seth's imagination, this works great.
Yeah, you represent his psyche and like his deepest desires. So then Summer and Marissa leave. Marissa's kind of like, what's going on with my dad? He seems a little bit more out of sorts than usual because he's always fucking frazzled. But she picks up on that. And then we cut to the Cohen's front door with Kirsten, and Jimmy is at the door. So Kirsten answers the door. Jimmy's there. And then Jimmy's asking Kirsten if she can hook him up with a place to stay because his apartment just fell through, as we saw in the previous scene. And Kirsten's like the real estate mogul's daughter of the Orange County. So she's like, of course, yeah, I'll call my realtor and we'll find a place for you. Like, don't worry, Jimmy. Everything's going to be fine. I always got your back, Jimmy. And she asked Jimmy,
and he's like, I love you. And she's like, what?
Excuse me? Nothing. He's like, nothing, Nick. Coffee? Do you have coffee? Coffee? So Kirsten asks Jimmy how the girls took the news that, you know, he's moving out and they're getting a divorce. He and Julie are getting a divorce and all this. And he reveals that he has not told Marissa and Caitlin that he's moving out this weekend.
Yeah.
Which it's
how?
Like,
okay, so my parents got divorced, but I had already moved out. Like, I was already in college, but I was trying to think how I would feel if, yeah, I like went somewhere for the weekend and I came back and one of them wasn't there anymore. And yeah. I'd be like, was this isn't better. This isn't, this
you feel like you're getting set up.
It is
like
better.
You're getting duped.
It's better than what he ended up doing.
What he ended up doing was probably the worst thing.
Yeah,
but again,
because he's Jimmy Cooper. That's Jimmy Cooper. Pick the worst thing to do.
He's an absolute buffoon. Like he might be the worst human I've ever seen.
It actually brings me to a point that I wrote down in my notes around, I think, this scene, maybe the next one with him and Kirsten. But I just don't understand. Like, I wish there was more motivation for Kirsten to help and like feel sympathy for him besides
their history.
We used to date and we're old friends.
That's
he
literally
sucks
it.
So hard.
He sucks so hard. He doesn't do anything to like, he, like all he does is ask for favors. He doesn't do anything to redeem himself in the eyes of
anybody. Exactly. Yeah.
Ever.
Give me some kind of like moment where I can root for him a little bit. Like, he's not even like a great dad or, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
He doesn't do anything.
Yeah. And he's terrible he's terrible at everything. Any sort of like social communication. Like, I do believe that he genuinely like loves his family and like, and cares for Marissa. Like, they have a few sweet moments prior to this episode where you get the sense that like he really loves her. So it's not that, it's not like a lack of caring. It's just a lack of common sense that this guy has, and a lack of, I guess, like decency. And he's always like kind of weaseling out of tough situations, or trying to weasel his way out of tough situations.
Right. And this choosing one the no wrong thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like making the wrong choices over and over and over again. And it just seems like at their age, Kirsten would have kind of written him off.
Oh yeah.
Like I want to see what it is in him that Kirsten still cares so much about, you know.
That's why they're constantly writing a line for her to say that's like, he's my oldest friend.
Yeah.
Because as an audience, you're like, what the fuck?
And why, even that feels tired.
Why does
tired,
she like bend know? Over backwards and do all this crazy shit for him?
And you my know what? Friend was kind of friend. A piece of shit, and I stopped being friends with him.
I know, like, like if you really want to be a good friend to Jimmy Kirsten, then stop enabling him to be a piece of shit. Like
for sure.
Like hold him accountable for shit instead of just like letting him slide for all this bullshit that he's pulling. So. Yeah, Jimmy kind of ends the scene by saying, and it's consistent with his character. It's something I consistently dislike about his character. He's like, I never thought I'd be that guy, you know, that divorced guy. And I'm just like, he has this like image of like what his life should be, like in his head. And he's like, I can't be the divorced guy. I can't be the guy who goes to jail. Like, that's not me. I can't be that guy. I'm like, bitch, this is you. Like, this is your life.
You are that guy.
It is happening. Well, that's, you can't
that
ignore
is what
it.
I what I do like about his character, not like in a redeeming, but like the way that they write his character is that in my mind he is this idea of like privileged white Newport guy that just expects everything to go his way and everything to be handed to him.
Yeah.
And then when he actually has to like do stuff like, you know, invest people's money, he's not good at it, and he's just like, but I wanted to be good at this.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but you're not.
Yeah, it does make it feels more believable that way. Mm-hmm. Because that definitely all comes from a place of privilege for sure. So we jump out of that scene, thankfully, by Jimmy. Yeah. We go to-
the B and C storylines in this episode are very meaningless. I mean, they move the story forward, but...
Yeah, you're talking about Sandy's like, job and Kirsten and Jimmy. Yeah, I agree.
They are both basically like a scene, too, or like could have been done in a scene. Like, they don't really need that much time, which is good for this episode because the focus is so much more on...
Like the kids.
Tijuana.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
But it's just funny that like every time we cut to them, we're like, okay, fine. Like, we get it.
Who cares? So then we cut to Luke's bedroom with Marissa and Luke, and they're like hardcore making out on the bed like teenagers do. And Luke's like, oh man, it's going to be so rad when we go to Tijuana and we have a hotel room. We can just bang the whole time all weekend or whatever. And Marissa's
Let
like...
Let me ask you guys real fast. I meant to do it at the top of the show. I've never been to Tijuana. Is it like a party, like Panama City kind of place?
Yeah, except for you can drink at 18 or maybe even younger.
So high school
kids
I just think
in Southern
really
California
card.
Go all the time. I've never been either, but I have family in Southern California. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, it's a big place for high school kids to go, especially back in the day. I think it was, I don't know how easy it is to get in and out of there these days. Probably still pretty easy, but you know, there's a time where it's just like, yeah, you just drive over, party, stay in a hotel room and then come home. It, like us going.
Yeah.
To
you
Panama
didn't need
City
a, you didn't need a passport to get into Mexico up until I think in 2003, you could still just drive over there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All I know about Tijuana is this episode of the OC. That's my extent of knowledge about Tijuana.
I just wanted to make sure they were portraying it accurately because it very much has a like there should be a Margaritaville somewhere.
It's like when you dock on a cruise ship and there's just like Senor Frog's bullshit all over the place. Yeah.
Like my understanding is that it's literally like marketed for high school kids to come down and get drunk. Mm-hmm. Like that's the tourism in Tijuana for the most part.
There is a big inconsistency or issue geographically that I'll bring up later when we get to it. But
Mitchell and his maps
did a little investigation. Actually my sister did, and she sent me a text. We'll get there. So they're making out on the bed. Luke's like, can't wait to get to TJ. Marissa's like, I don't think I'm going to go to Tijuana because my dad's having like a meltdown right now and I want to be there for him, which I'm like, that's great. Like Marissa, that's a solid, like very perceptive, and you'd be doing the right thing if you feel like your dad's in trouble. And the fact that she like is 17 years old and she cares about her dad that much. Like, not that I never didn't love my dad, but when I was 17, I was just like,
Oh, yeah.
If I had the opportunity to go to Tijuana, yeah, forget about it.
She's also going to
Tijuana and have sex with Luke.
Shit. You know, she, from the get-go of this episode, really from the end of last episode when she saw Ryan and then ran to Luke's arms.
Yeah.
She's been going through some emotional.
Yeah, I feel like she's partly like, I also don't want to go to Tijuana because I'm like not that into you.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to like
super mentally prepared to go like party. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's not in that headspace right now.
Absolutely. She should be at home.
I felt very bad for Marissa in general in this episode. It's very just sad. She's very mopey, but like rightfully so.
Yeah, she gets a lot dumped on her in this one. Yeah. Like last episode, I was just like very frustrated with her because she was so indecisive and she was just kind of like walking around like, I don't know what to do. But this episode, like shit hits the fan in a really terrible way for her. And yeah, it's sad. And Luke's a bit dismissive of her wanting to not go to Tijuana because he's obviously very much looking forward to it. And he's just
Before he knows that she's talking about Tijuana, she's like, I don't think I want to. And he thinks she's talking about sex. And he says, it's always better the second time, which is a callback
to
something Summer said.
That's a callback. That's
an actual callback, although it's a weird callback because he didn't know that Summer said, he didn't realize he was making a callback.
Yeah, it's just this.
That's also him being like, I know that it wasn't that good the first time.
Yeah.
Well, Marissa must be thinking in her head right then, though, that's a callback because she
was there for both of them. Yeah, well, I'm glad that Luke, they at least were on the same page. They had sex and then they were like, okay, we can both agree that wasn't great, right? At least Luke wasn't like, oh my God, that was amazing. And Marissa's like, I don't know about that. So Luke's like, he's a bit dismissive. He's like, I got to go meet the guys. And he gets up and leaves. And then we cut to the Crab Shack where Ryan is working and Seth is at the counter, like eating some chips or whatever. And,
yeah, at this point, we talked about when Ryan first got the job and Seth would like wait for him anxiously to get off work. Now Seth just goes to work sits at the counter.
I'll just eat like fries for 4 hours.
I worked a restaurant job in high school.
I'll get free Coke refills. Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, I mean, think about it. Like, I spent so much time in high school, like, just like sitting at a Waffle House, smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee, like,
right,
so many hours just doing that, like with my friend, because like I was so bored. You're so bored in high school. You don't know what to do. Yeah. But yeah, if I had a friend who worked at a restaurant, and I could hang out at the bar, and like I'd be there every night.
I had a delivery job for a point. I think I was like 19. This might have been like my first year out of high school. But I had a friend who, on occasion, would come hang out with me at work the whole time and then also get in the car and run around on deliveries with me. Like, just to hang out by my side the whole time.
Did like, he ever, like, help you with the deliveries?
I mean, I wouldn't make them. Deliveries, it's a very easy job.
Yeah. I don't know if you, like, yeah, like help you, like, carry, like, refrigerators to somebody's doorstep or whatever.
Well, no, it was Italian food, so.
Oh, that pasta. That delivery.
That kind of delivery.
Your that's mind went to like
Amazon,
like huge appliances.
I just picture Muhammad in like a big old truck. And his friends are riding shotgun. He's
when
like, "Can
you
I
want the washer dryer, ma'am?"
Nope, I'm not getting paid, but my friend Muhammad is.
I'm just along for the ride.
I'm just here because I'm bored.
That's exactly what he sounded like.
You got a cool friend.
Your friend also sold papers in front of the grocery store. And said, extra.
4'6".
So Seth's at the counter. Ryan's, you know, working. And Seth says to Ryan, is she looking at me? Still no? Ryan's like, no, she's not looking at you. Because behind Seth is Summer and like Holly and like a bunch of those, the popular kids, sitting at like a booth. And I noticed that Summer was sitting with a bunch of blonde ass people. Like, yeah, everybody at that table besides Summer was like blonde ass blonde.
Also, just a big group of people that we didn't know from the show.
Yeah, I think Holly
makes sense, but I was like, look at Summer with all those strangers.
Yeah.
I was going to say, because later in this scene, Luke high fives one of his bros. And for a second, I really hoped that it was Marlin, our favorite of Luke's bros. But I think he also has dark hair. So
I think he does, yeah.
I'm thinking
probably not.
He wasn't invited to the Crab Shack.
Wasn't blonde enough. So Luke and Marissa enter the Crab Shack, and that's when Luke kind of gives like the wave to Ryan, like, I'm not here to beat you up. I'm a nice guy, remember? And then Ryan's kind of like, whatever, dude. And then Ryan and Marissa have a little exchange while Luke goes to the table. And this is the first time they've talked, I guess, since she told him that he was too late at the end of the last episode, which I assume it's been about a week or two maybe that have passed since then. And their exchange is very short and kind of like you could feel a lot of contempt on either side. But
I wanted to point out that we always give Marissa shit for her, oh, hey, her like signature greeting that she always does. But Ryan also kind of, he goes like, hey. It's like a hey. And
everybody,
he does
do
it a lot,
Ryan.
Like not as much as she does, but he does it a lot. And later, I think it's later in this season, it's this thing he does for a little while where whenever it's Seth, he always goes, Hey man. Just like, hey man. But he's like, I'm getting rid of those vowels, I'm gonna put it on a license plate. It's just
Hey man.
But it's just like, hey. And I wonder if he always said hey like that, or if just from being around Marissa, he was like, I should probably develop my own greeting because she has that one.
Ryan isn't like, he's a fine actor. That actor is Ben McKenzie's a fine actor, but the character's not that much more developed than a Marissa Cooper, maybe even less developed. I mean, he's very, dull, I guess.
He's kind of one dimensional. Like, I guess he likes comics, but
yeah.
You just wait, Muhammad. He kind of develops along with the show, and he's still
excited.
Pretty stoic,
and I do like him, but I have some love for Marissa too. Last episode was a real low point for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she's at least like, she's kind of got a lot of layers to the character. At least I thought she was actually really interesting in the first couple episodes, because she was also trying to like play cool girl, and like, even, you know, I laughed so hard when you guys were describing her right now. But it was very like, that was one of the most like accurate high school girl things I could, you know, or boy even things that, you know, like I just thought like early on she seemed like, oh, she's like a layered, interesting high school character. Cringy for sure, but you know, high school character.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. She's just like, it's the relationship stuff and like coupled with the bad acting that can be frustrating about her, I think.
Yeah, it's just the fact that she never like has words. She's kind of like Jimmy.
Yeah.
She never like has the right words for whatever the situation is. So she spends most of her time just kind of like in like great angst, sort of just like awkwardly shrugging and biting
her
lip
her
and crying and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Like, I think she started off pretty strong. Remember how smart she was in the first couple episodes and how like crafty she was? And then like, she just turned into this so she was so self-assured, and then like she became the complete opposite. She was just
and
like,
she's lost like all agency. Like, she was making plans in those first few episodes. She was like, you know, she was like, Ryan's got to come to the cotillion or whatever. And you know, the model home thing, was that her idea or partly her idea or whatever? Like,
I think it was Seth's idea, but she definitely helped. Yeah. Because like the way that Ryan and Seth were going to go about it, she was just like, you guys are idiots. Like, get in the car and like, I'll help you do this.
Yeah. The last couple episodes, she's just been like the personification of a shrug. I mean, she's just like, whatever.
100%, man.
You know,
well,
like not.
I think she's, you know, like we said, she's going through stuff. I know she'll, she kind of, you know, peaks and valleys throughout the series, really, where she'll have, you know, a stretch of episodes where she's like the first couple episodes, and then she'll have a few like the last couple episodes, and it's just like inconsistent. But I guess that's, I mean, that's how people are in life. So
that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's just not, she's just not that fun to watch all the time. Yeah. She's right. Like frustrating to watch. So yeah, their exchange is very short. Ryan's like, "How have you been? I haven't seen you in a while." Marissa's like, "Well, the last time I saw you, you had your hands full because it was with, what's her name? The girlfriend.
Yeah. Gabrielle.
And, she's kind of telegraphing a little bit of jealousy with that. And, they just kind of disdainfully say goodbye to each other and go about their separate ways. So Marissa goes to the table with Luke, Holly sitting across from her. And it's a little bit awkward because Luke and Holly were like hooking up, you know, a couple episodes back, when Luke got shot. And now Luke and Marissa appear to be back together. And, it's just a little.
Marissa doesn't know that Luke and Holly.
Yeah.
Marissa, correct.
Well, Holly is not doing a great job of hiding her feelings at that table.
Yeah. No, when they're like talking by the fish tank.
Yeah,
like that restaurant is not very big.
No,
like, do you think they could see them from the table? Like, I was trying to figure out where the fish tank was in relation to that table.
I think it is sort of around the corner. So think like the bars here. Then there's the little wall where like the sink and stuff. So you go around that, and that's where the fish tank is. I'm assuming it's like by the bathrooms or something, because I do recall like when Ryan comes around and spots them, he kind of like comes from around the corner, and then when they go back, they go around. So I assume they were hidden when they were having that conversation. But yeah, like Holly again, just like teenagers not being good at poker face, like Holly's just sitting there just like, "Oh, hey Marissa, Luke, isn't this awkward?" And
party at my house. I didn't know, wait, we're going to Tijuana.
Yeah. Right. Party at my house in Tijuana. So the table, like the group sitting at the table, was also kind of making me laugh because they were doing that thing that they do sometimes in shows where they're not really talking, but they're smiling and laughing and high-fiving each other.
Yeah.
But there's no dialogue because, you know, they didn't write any, but it's just like general good time. But like, there's just like every now and then somebody will say things, but like you can watch them in between that. There's no dialogue. Nobody's talking, but they're like smiling and like.
The one kind of throwaway line I did pick up on was, I think it was Summer said something about like making the freshmen go to a donkey show for their hazing.
Yeah.
So I assume it's the freshmen who are on like the water polo team that are also coming to Tijuana. So it's like a ritual sort of thing.
They're going like a day early.
The water polo
that's
team.
That's why Summer can't ride down with them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think that's when they're implying that they're doing the hazing. And that's when Luke high fives somebody about a donkey show.
Yeah.
Yes.
But also doesn't comment about it. That's like nobody says anything. There's like, no comments. There's no like dialogue. She just says that and then they like smile, high five, and it's silent.
Yep. They're just trying to get out of that scene. Let's just get out of there. So then we cut to the law firm that Sandy is interviewing at. You know, it's. Ugh. Did you notice the name of the firm? It was I think it was Partridge, Savage, and Khan.
And Khan.
It's like,
so the writers were fans of the Partridge family
and
Macho Man Randy Savage,
and then Star Trek. Yeah, it was like Savage and Khan. Like that just sounds like. Evil corporation name.
Yeah. They added the partridge at the beginning because it's like a sweet bird.
Yes. Yes.
I think Cohen's interviewing at evil.
Yeah. It's too much evil.
And teddy bear.
There we go. Now it's diverse. So this is where we get introduced to Rachel, who is like an old lawyer buddy of Sandy's. And they have this awkward sort of, they almost kiss when they greet each other. It's like when you go in for a hug, but your faces both go in the same direction and you like almost like headbutt or lock lips with each other. And so what do you think's going on there?
Their faces just get kind of close.
I think not like an
intentional almost kiss, just like a
it was just like a mouth almost bumped. Yeah,
I think at a certain range, if you get close enough to Peter Gallagher's eyebrows, you're just pulled in.
They have their own magnetic field.
Like a tractor beam, they pull you in.
I just couldn't stop staring at him. So yeah, if I went in for a hug with Peter Gallagher, I'd just be like, eyebrows. And then he's like, why are you sucking on my eyebrows, sir?
I was thinking who would play Sandy Cohen in an updated version of the OC?
Oh, that's a fun thought.
If you had to cast that role. Because Peter Gallagher is such a specific actor, I think. You know what I mean?
He's got a real style. He's not like a type, right?
He's his own. Not a lot of Peter Gallagher types.
Not anymore.
But yeah, my first thought was John Krasinski, because he's just very similar, I felt like. He's like friendly dad, moppish kind of, you know, vibe to him.
I think Sandy Cohen has to be Jewish, though. I think that's part of the...
That's true.
That's part of the character. That's a big part of the
character. My other thought was Sterling K. Brown. Also not Jewish, but he can do like tough and sweet. And I was like, yeah, that's important for Sandy.
I mean, you throw a yarmulke on Krasinski.
I thought you were
going to
say my other thought was, why are they rebooting the OC?
My question is, why aren't they?
You just get Peter Gallagher again.
I mean, to be honest, he's still got it.
He's just an old dad.
So he and Rachel are kind of like ragging on each other, like, oh, 6 seconds without an insult. You're getting soft, Cohen, blah, blah, blah. And so they're chumming it up. That's great. Sandy's like, how do you like working for the man? She's like, oh, decent hours, proper compensation. Not bad. So the reason that Sandy's getting this job interview is because of his work with Jimmy Cooper's financial situation has earned him a lot of like clout, I guess, I assume there's like lawyer blogs or something. It's just like, do you hear what Sandy Cohen did with Jimmy Cooper's case? We got to hire
Jimmy
him.
Cooper case.
Nobody wants to
that
touch
guy
that
was
guy's
dead
case.
To rights.
But yeah, she's like, you know, trying to sell him on coming to work for the man. Like you were saying, Muhammad, this B and C plot line, not a whole lot going on. We know he's going for the job interview. He's at the job interview. What we did learn is that she's an old pal. She's an attractive woman. They have a little bit of history, but there's no immediate signs of like flirtation or anything other than them just kind of like being chummy with each other. I did notice
it is an ongoing thing with her, because she's in the next couple episodes, and there's always that like, is Sandy gonna try to make a move? And like some scenes, it's like very obvious that they want you to think that he's going to, and he doesn't because he's a
decent.
Good man.
Yeah,
they have good chemistry, and that's all you really need in a TV show. A man and a woman having good chemistry for audiences to kind of go like, "Ooh, are they gonna hook up?"
That's a good point.
Really, you guys can have a pretty good conversation. You should hook up.
They can talk to each other. I did notice, like, so they go to get in an elevator to like go to the boardroom or whatever, and I noticed that, like, I hate it when like elevator doors stay open for them to finish their dialogue and then they close like right when they finish the like the doors stay open way too long. Like Sandy says a full like four sentences while they're standing in the elevator, and then the doors go bing and then they just close.
You see him keep jamming the door open button until he's finished talking.
And another thing.
So then we cut. I like this transition. Like the doors close, the camera kind of pushes in, goes to black, and then we start on black, and we tilt up, and we're in the crab shack again. Like it's just a fun little transition. And we see Seth eavesdropping, which is not cute. On like the table behind him, still Summer and them, and Ryan's kind of listening in too, since Marissa's there, I guess. And Marissa tells Summer that she's no longer going to Tijuana. And Summer's like, well, how am I going to get there? I was going to ride with you. And this is when we see Luke and Holly at the fish tank kind of talking, which, by the way, nice fish tank. Did you guys notice how nice that fish tank
nice.
Was? Really nice fish tank.
Well, they're serving, you know, $100 glasses of wine and Red Solo cups or whatever that guy said.
They yeah. can afford it. So
Muhammad, callback.
Callback.
Boom.
Very a jumbled callback, but a callback.
Hey, we got there. There's no such thing as a bad callback except the beginning of this episode.
Except I just remember him saying that because it sounded like a cool place to it sounded like it'd be a fun like I got the appeal when he said it. I was like, yeah, it's like casual but like fancy and
yeah.
It's like I want to drink fancy wine and have like a styrofoam cup looking over the beach.
Love it. So Holly's telling Luke that she wants to hook up with him when they're in Tijuana since Marissa's not coming. And Luke's kind of got this like, I don't know, me and Marissa are still we're getting back together. But you can tell he's like kind of into it. And then Ryan Atwood, who hears and sees everything.
He sees all.
He comes around the corner and kind of spots them. And then they kind of awkwardly like split and run away. And Ryan's kind of like, okay, I know what you're up to, fucking Luke.
Peace shit, Luke.
Fuck you, Luke. Eat shit. So, you know, Seth's eavesdropping, hearing that Marissa's not going. Summer needs a ride. So Seth pops up, walks over to Summer with all the confidence in the world. Like, hey, you may remember me as the boy you kissed at my grandfather's birthday.
He always goes, hi, Summer, Seth Cohen. He always, like, introduces himself.
Yeah.
And I always enjoy it because at this point, it's been like 7 episodes where they've had some interaction and he's always like, Seth Cohen, nice yeah. to good to see you.
You think well, she
plays it cool too, which I like. I mean, especially you get the gist of it in this episode where she's like, of course Summer knows who he is, you right. know.
And, yeah. Yeah.
But still is like playing that like, you know, I don't know if hard to get's the right word. Like cool, too cool for him.
He says hot and cold at the beginning of the scene, which I don't know if that's it seems like it's just all cold
except like that one moment
one little hot. Spark yeah. So he offers her the ride and she kind of I guess begrudgingly accepts and then we cut to the Cohen's living room with Seth, Ryan and Sandy and they've got their bags packed. Sandy thinks they're going to Comic-Con and he's being like, you know, overprotective dad, like, did you put air in the tires? You sure there's gas? And blah blah blah. You got your medicine. You got an extra pair of underwear. Blah, blah, blah. And I just love it whenever Peter Gallagher is being extra dad mode.
So dad.
I just think it's great. Even when he's being lame, he's still somehow super cool.
maybe Nick Kroll could play the new Sandy Cohen.
That I would watch. There you go. Yeah, there you go. Now we're talking. So
let's redo this series, guys.
Let's do it. We'll recast the whole thing. So then we track out of the living room into the driveway, and we see Summer waiting in the driveway, with like her sunglasses and her like little scarf around her head, and she's got like a bunch of bags and stuff there, and Sandy's like, oh, Summer, I didn't know you were into comics. And then Summer's just like, ew, comics, ew. And then Seth's like, oh, she goes for the anime. Sandy's like, anime? Like, Sandy's like never heard that word before. Like,
oh, interesting.
Summer looked very, very mid-2000s in this scene with her bandana and tank top.
Yes.
I thought it was a cool look.
If there's one thing, yeah, this show did, it was like be very accurate with how, like we were saying, yeah, like they were accurate in the way that kind of like teens deal with emotional situations or like sex and stuff like that. But they also nailed the fashion, I would say, and the music. Like they got all those indie.
It's one of the things that I think I really liked about this. Whoa. Is that me? Did you guys hear me echoing just now?
No.
Sorry. One of the things that I really like about the show is that it's like a real nice little snapshot of that time.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of a lot of those, like, I never watched Dawson's Creek or Buffy or anything like that, but I assume they have a similar vibe to them.
Yeah, I mean, even like Star Trek The Next Generation, like, feels late 80s, early 90s, sure. Even though it's supposed to be in the future. Like, everything is kind of like shaped through the lens of what's going on. But this show was specifically trying to hone in on like this moment, this culture, teen culture. And, you know, they would be on the precipice of like whatever's cool or whatever all the like cool kids are wearing or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but
is,
yeah,
are, I think those they, shows, is that the contemporaries of this show? Like, Dawson's Creek, I guess. That's like this show, I think,
like,
right?
Sort of like teen dramas.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Dawson's Creek.
Although I don't know
been...
if Dawson's Creek was as funny. Like, this show's pretty comedic. In
it's age. Wide.
I've heard it. People say like 90210, which I've never seen, but...
I guess I never watched any of them, so I don't know. Maybe they are.
I guess that would be the most direct comparison, but that was like way before... That was like a decade before this show. But yeah, I think...
Also, did those shows deal with the adults as much? Because the show has a lot of...
90210? Like,
yeah, or Dawson's Creek.
I'm not sure. You know. Like, I never really watched those either, but you're right. Like, the show always has... Almost fair play between the adults and the kids.
And the kids.
This episode maybe being an exception because it's such a kid heavy episode.
Yeah, right.
Because of the road trip. So Summer's like, I'm gonna go say goodbye to Marissa because she lives next door. And so this is kind of a callback. When Summer leaves, Sandy says to Seth, "She's hot stuff, son." Which he said in the previous episode when Seth's like, Summer wants to go to Caleb's birthday party with me. He's like, Summer's hot.
He knows it fucking pisses Seth off, and he does it so, and it's so great every
That's
time.
What makes it so great, too. It doesn't feel creepy or weird.
Yes, right.
Because he's, like, so in Seth's face when he says it, too.
Yep.
He's, like, definitely doing it to see his reaction.
She's hot stuff,
Seth. Yeah. He does say it kind of like, well, he says everything kind of breathy, but
she's hot stuff.
He's just, like, in his face. It's hilarious.
But you're right. It is endearing. It doesn't come across as creepy at all, thankfully. But I think only like I think if Jimmy did that, it would immediately be like, ew, don't even.
Disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But since it's Peter Gallagher, like, he can pull that off. So then we cut to the Cooper residence, and we're in the hallway with Marissa, Summer, and Jimmy. And this is where Marissa tells Jimmy that she thinks she's going to stay instead of going to Tijuana. And then Jimmy's like, oh, you're kind of fucking my shit up in his head. He's not saying this out loud. He's like, I was going to move out this weekend and not tell you and then just deal with it when you got back. But,
he does say, though.
He says he has other plans. That's it.
He says,
I can't take care of both of us.
Yeah.
To his daughter.
So weird. Such
oh,
a
yeah. Yeah, I
I'm
wrote
not
that
a dad,
down. Like, what the fuck?
I feel like if you're a dad, that's your job is to take care of your child.
Your priority is taking care of your child.
Yeah. Like, just fucking go to Mexico. I can't take care of both of us.
What are you, like, 17
Henry
now?
He's kind of Harry and the Henderson her.
Yeah, he's trying to...
Get out of here.
Nobody wants you.
Throwing
just go.
Rocks at her.
Just go.
And she's just like, fuck, Dad. I was just trying to be nice and like hang out with you this weekend. Shit, dude. Yeah, fuck Jimmy.
He's like, I'll explain everything with a phone call in a couple days.
While you're on the road.
Yeah, later tonight. So Marissa, it is later that night, right? Like, he can't tell her there, but he's like, oh, fucking... I'll do it when you're in Mexico. Idiot. So
yeah, do we even know why he has the change of heart and calls her? I guess Kirsten.
I think
he talks to
Kirsten again.
Yeah.
And she's like, dude.
Which is bad advice.
Which, yeah, again, like Jimmy doing the worst possible thing you can do at the worst possible time. So Marissa's just kind of begrudgingly like, okay, I guess I'll go pack my shit. And then she and Summer exit. And then we're in the Cooper's driveway, and the Range Rover's there, And Marissa's like, who did you get a ride with? And Summer's like, oh, you'll see. Marissa opens the back door to get in. And who's sitting on the other side but Ryan Atwood?
Why does she say, who did you get a ride with, when they're walking up to the Cohen's house?
She's like, it's a surprise.
She knows they live there because she lives next door.
What? I thought that they... I thought that Ryan and Seth had pulled the car into the Cooper's driveway. Am I wrong? Were they at the Cohen's house?
I think so. Maybe. I mean, why would he drive next door
to pick him up? Driveway? Also, like, they didn't know that Marissa was coming, right? Like, Summer was like, I'm going to go say goodbye to Marissa.
Yeah,
she goes to say goodbye, and then Jimmy's like, fucking get out of here! And then Marissa's like, okay, fine.
I can't take care of both of us!
So, yeah, the fact that they, like, drove the car just to pick up Summer and Marissa's driveway doesn't make sense. You're right. But whatever. So, yeah,
is that the same Range Rover, by the way? They got it fixed up from the party.
They got it fixed up pretty quick, right? It was just mostly spray paint. I feel
but still, that's like
new paint job,
just repainting
and new windows. Maybe I don't know if that cleans off.
Still, a lot of work.
They can afford it,
but they're fucking.
It's hard to tell how, unless they specifically say it. It's hard to tell how much time is from like episode to episode. Yeah,
that's true.
I feel like it's at least a week in between episodes, maybe more.
We know for a fact that this is happening 1 week before school starts.
Right. This is the last party before school.
Luke's arm's completely healed.
Luke's fine. Come on. It was just a gunshot wound, like, to the
arm. he was totally high fiving his bros with no pain.
Yeah, he was fine.
And humping away on fucking Marissa.
Yeah, he's really milking that gunshot wound. He's making the most of it. So the kids, we dipped a commercial when Marissa sees Ryan and they're like, oh, we have to ride to Tijuana together. Awkward. And then we come back from commercial on Jimmy's new apartment, and we're with Jimmy and Kirsten, and they're painting Jimmy's new apartment. And I'm
so
like,
so frustrated.
You're frustrated?
Watching this scene, I was just like steaming.
Oh yeah,
like what is she doing? Why is she there? Why does she keep helping him?
He's her oldest friend, Muhammad.
I think she even says, like, why didn't you just call somebody to do this? And he's like, where's the fun in that? I don't get to hang out with like the love of my life if I do that.
And she's like a super busy person.
Yeah,
like, she always talks about how busy she is, but I never see her work.
Well, half the time that's helping out Jimmy fucking Cooper.
Yeah. It's fucking pity case. So, Jimmy's like, thanks for helping me paint. You know, it only took 2 hours to paint my dorm room. Fucking let it go, dude. Like, he just like is always bringing up, like, remember when we were kids and we like used to make out in your car? Like, it's fucking always bringing it up. And
always.
Kirsten's like, oh, well, that dorm room was the size of a prison cell. And then Jimmy says, well, we may be painting that soon, too. Sorry.
I guess it just makes me think Kirsten is stupid. And I don't think she's stupid.
I think
but every time I see her interacting with him, I'm like, I guess she's just dumb.
She's like kind to a fault. She's like Ned Stark or something. She's like,
yeah,
well, maybe.
She's
but
like,
there
like
is, I mean,
or
there
she
is,
likes him, or she still has actual feelings for him. I mean, that's
there's no indication
likely thing
of the, like, obviously Jimmy loves her, but they drop no hints whatsoever that Kirsten's still into him. It feels very much like he's
sure,
an old friend.
Except for her actions, though. Like, by actions alone, you would think, well, maybe she's still got a thing for him because
she's doing all this shit.
Always
for
wants
him
to be around him.
Yeah. Well, I think he just kind of like, I think it's more like he's always bugging her, like, hey, can you help me paint my apartment?
But why would you say yes over and over and over again?
Because she's a chump, man.
He's her oldest friend.
Like, think about her dad, Caleb.
I also like the idea of him thinking that if he goes to prison, they'll let Kirsten in to help him paint his prison.
That's funny. This is your cell. Oh, you're not happy with the color? Oh, well, we'll get some swatches in here. We'll find a color that agrees with you, and then you can just invite whoever you want to come help you paint your jail cells, Jimmy.
Do you have like Kirsten a really old friend that
$100,000 in a paint can? The shiv.
But he says that, which is like, if you're trying to hit on this lady, that's not a good move. But it's also like, I thought he like got off. Like, I thought he wasn't going to jail because of the Herculean efforts of Sandy Cohen.
It seems like it was just kind of to maybe buy him some time.
Okay.
Yeah, he still has to pay everything back, I'm guessing. Also, has the hearing or whatever happened? Like, has the trial happened?
There's been no
mention. Has he actually pleaded yet? Like,
I think they kind of brush past it, and then in that scene where Rachel is talking to Sandy about it.
Yeah.
That's almost as if, like, that should have been an episode or a part of an episode, and they were just like, we'll just have a character say it.
Yeah, they just kind of blow through that, which I'm fine with.
Right.
So Jimmy reveals to Kirsten that he still has not told his daughters that he and his wife are getting a divorce and that he's moving out into this apartment that they're painting. And Kirsten's like surprised by this, but I'm thinking like, it's only been at most like a few hours since you guys had that last conversation. It's like within the span of a few hours, Kirsten was able to find Jimmy an apartment, be like, okay, you can move in now. Let's go to the paint store. Let's get some paint. Get some rollers.
Yeah, she's spending all fucking day with him.
For real. And Jimmy responds to like why he hasn't told his daughters. He's like, it's too hard. It's too hard. I can't do it. It's too hard. Quit being a...
Again, this is this character.
This is Jimmy.
He's just like, Kirsten, can you do it for me? Can you just... You call her. I can't. It's too hard.
It's too hard. And Kirsten says, well, Marissa will... Or he says, Marissa will never forgive me if I tell her this fact, which she's going to find out anyway. And Kirsten's like, chill, bro. Like, she's going to still love you. She's your daughter. I promise. And then they kind of like... The scene ends with them kind of like making eyes at each other. You notice that? I don't know if it's... this was like the first hint of like, what's going on here, you know?
I don't know. I mean, they kiss later in this episode, so yeah, maybe they were
playing.
But she like pulls back immediately.
Yeah, it's all like, Jimmy. The kiss is all Jimmy.
No, she nods. She nods yes.
To the kiss?
Yeah, like right before he kisses. You can see it in the scene.
Shut up.
It might be like an actor syndicating or indicating something. Like, it might have been not a character choice as much as... But she's going like this.
She's like, yeah. Lay it on
like me. In the reverse. Like, when you're looking at Jimmy, you see her
nodding.
Doing this.
Fuck, I didn't notice that. Okay.
Check it out.
This changes
things.
It's
very weird. I didn't know what to make of it, if it was like, oh, this is a character thing, or if it's like, oh, this is... Her
but you couldn't.
Moving,
you couldn't see
or
her
it's
face.
The actress indicating, like, okay, now or something. I don't know.
Yeah, when I give you the signal,
you're like, go for it, do it. I'm ready. I'm ready to kiss your gross little teeth. He has gross little teeth. So then we cut to the Range Rover. We're on the road, driving to Tijuana with the kids. Summer says the GPS says it'll take 3 hours. To get to Tijuana from Newport Beach. This is where my sister
and her maps
reveal that to actually drive from Newport Beach to Tijuana, 1 hour and 45 minutes.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. Nothing.
Wow.
It's like right next door.
Maybe within the last couple of years, they opened some expressway that goes directly from Newport to Tijuana.
They were like, we got to get these kids here quicker. Like, they don't need to spend 3 hours on the road. We need them in Tijuana pronto.
Yeah.
So maybe my first thought was that would have been easy, something easy to do research on and know, right? But then my second thought was actually... There was no like you couldn't just plug it into a GPS in 2003.
Couldn't just Google Map it. Well, I mean, yeah, they had GPS, so they had MapQuest or whatever at least.
Yeah, you would print out directions on MapQuest.
Also, they are making the show in Southern California. You think they would know?
Yeah,
I'll go with Jay's answer. There's a new freeway.
New freeway. It opened in 2017, so well after the show. So Summer and Seth are bickering about Seth's driving. Apparently Seth's driving a little too slow for Summer, who's riding shotgun.
Yeah, I loved this scene, by the way.
It was pretty cute.
This is very funny.
Yeah. This whole, like, from this point on, basically, the, like, back and forth with these two is fucking great. I love it.
Although she does, and I'm sure Mitchell has it written down, is going to touch upon it. She does... get anti-Semitic.
A little anti-Semitic. You're absolutely right. I wrote that down. So yeah, Summer says something to the effect of like, oh, this humidity, it's like making my hair frizz. And Cohen says something like, I think this agrees with my Jufro. And she goes, you're Jewish?
Yeah.
Does she say ooh?
Like a disgusted face.
She doesn't say ooh.
She doesn't say ooh, but the tone she makes.
But she's like grossed out at the fact that Seth is Jewish.
Yeah.
What's with all the anti-Semitism in this town? Like Caleb in the previous episode, big anti-Semite.
Oh yeah.
It's Sandy. It's almost like, I don't know. It's almost like they want to illustrate that people in this town are like small-minded or something, but
sure.
I don't know.
Well, why do it with our main cast? Like, that's a hard thing for a viewer to get over.
Yeah, you can't backpedal on that too easily.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. I will never forget now that Summer was kind of disgusted by the fact that he was Jewish.
Yeah, yeah, that'll stick with me for a while.
If we, like what we were talking about in the pilot is, like, if we are to view Seth as sort of the, like, Josh Schwartz, the showrunner, as like Seth is like him.
Yeah.
Then I guess he maybe felt that a lot growing up there.
I'm sure he did.
So
I'm sure there are a bunch of fucking douchebag anti-Semites in that.
But so. I was really enjoying Summer in this episode.
Until she said that.
Until then.
Right before that, she does say 80 is the new 70 or something, which I thought was very stupid.
And Seth goes, who talks like that?
Seth calls it out. So I was like very pleased because it was a very dumb line.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's again that thing where it's like, yeah, she's a fucking dumb teenager. She says dumb things like that.
She makes fun of Seth's music, which is the first time that we've heard Death Cab for Cutie actually on an episode of the OC.
Despite hearing about them a bunch, because it's Seth's favorite band.
Yeah.
She says...
favorite band, but I did, and they were, you know, it's a song off Transatlanticism, which when we were in high school, huge high school album
big
for
album.
Me, but not great road trip music.
Nah.
That is true.
Pretty
could have made
pretty
it better.
Slow.
Throw in some Modest Mouse
kind of
or
bummer.
Something.
Maybe play something off the Photo album. That's another Death Cab album. It's a little more peppy.
Yeah. You want something that's fun. In fact, Summer says about Death Cab, it sounds like one guitar and a whole lot of complaining.
And then Seth says, reminds me of somebody else who's doing a lot of complaining.
Boom. They're just constantly Summer. Booming each other.
It's so good, man.
It is. It's really refreshing. It's refreshing to see Seth so quickly, like, kind of turn on her, too, in that way.
Yeah.
Where he's still, like, and throughout the episode, even acknowledges that he still is crushing on her,
mm-hmm.
but, like, will not put up with her shit.
Yeah, it's
which
great.
Which makes her better, too. Like, it makes her more likable from an audience point of view, watching Seth calling her on her shit constantly.
Yeah. They're challenging each other. And that's good. That's good TV. See, you can make characters fun to watch. So why can't they do it with Marissa?
Right.
So Seth gets fed up with Summer's shit and he's going to pull the car over and dump Summer on the road. Yeah. And in an attempt to do this, Summer retaliates by grabbing the wheel from Seth, and they are pulling back and forth, and they crash the Range Rover, which
it's the the worst crash I've ever seen in television.
I was gonna say they pull off the road at like 5 miles an hour, and then they just like cut to black, and you hear like a car crash sound. But it's like nothing that you saw previous to that would indicate that
it's not even like a loud crash sound, though. Like, it's almost unnoticeable. So much so that the first time I watched it, I was very confused. I didn't understand that, like, they didn't have their car anymore.
Yeah, you're like, it's fine.
It took until I was like, well, why are they checking in this shitty hotel? It took until she was like, we had to ride in a chicken van or whatever. But I was like, oh, I guess their car's not usable anymore because they just kind of pull over.
I'm also thinking, like, if they got the car towed to a mechanic and then they hitchhiked, got in the chicken truck, and then got dropped off at the motel, how do they get back to the mechanic to get their car?
Right.
You know? Like, wouldn't you want to be...
same chicken truck.
Chicken truck. It would be like, same time tomorrow? And he's like, I'll have more chickens then. Great. So, yeah, they crash the car. Then we cut to a motel room, like a dingy, like a roach motel. And Summer's just all ooing all over the place. Ew, this... Ew. And I couldn't agree more. Like, this place is gross. They really dinged that place up. Like, it was a little too much. I'm just like,
four fucking rich kids, too. You think that they could have just been like, take us to the nicest hotel in town.
Chicken truck. Yeah. You're still like...
There's nice motels and there's shitty motels. Like, even on the freeway, you can find a nice motel.
Not that hard. But regardless, they end up here. And
for the sake of the story,
it's got to be a gross motel. We'll see why soon. This is where Summer reveals that they hitchhiked. She pulls like a feather out of her hair at the exact moment she says they were in a chicken truck. Nice touch. Summer says
she makes
what's that?
I bet you're about to say the same thing.
The cold trickle line.
Yeah, she makes the most bizarre reference.
She's like, good driving, Cold Trickle. And even Seth's like, who is that? And she's like, Tom Cruise from Days of Thunder. I'm like, you mean the racing movie he did in the 80s?
It's also confusing because she was complaining about how slow he was going and then compared him to a race car driver.
Yeah, it's not like he was driving recklessly and crashed the car. Also, she grabbed the wheel of the car.
Right.
Which did not happen there in Days of Thunder.
There is a thing about this show in Tom Cruise movies, because in the second season, they're doing an auction and like
the crystal egg.
Crystal Egg from Risky Business is one of the... So it's like old Tom Cruise movies hold a special place in Josh Schwartz's heart.
I liked that
Summer had that line. It was very bizarre and very funny, but it's another one of those like kind of revealing layers about the character of Summer, which maybe she's not like as cool as she tries to pretend to be.
Yeah.
She has this weird back pocket reference of a movie that she likes that nobody else in the room knew. Everybody, like, that's what made it so funny. It's like, even Seth was just like, huh?
Yeah.
What?
Seth, the pop culture guru of the group, didn't even know that one. Then we cut to the Coen's kitchen with Kirsten and Sandy. And Kirsten's still in like her I just painted Jimmy's apartment clothing. And Sandy's like asking where she was. She says, I was helping Jimmy paint. She's like, is it okay that I helped him paint? And Sandy's just kind of like, yeah, that's fine. I mean, guy's going through a lot. You're trying to be a good friend. It's cool. And then he's kind of stopped in his tracks when he sees a beautiful yellow surfboard on his dining room table. You shouldn't have. There's a brand spanking new surfboard on the table with a big red bow on it. And Kirsten says, well, I didn't get that for you. Who's Rachel?
Hmm?
Who's Rachel while I go help Jimmy paint?
Hmm?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I forgot who Rachel was at this moment the first time we watched it also.
I mean, so they've only had...
Like, wait, who's Rachel?
Like, who is Rachel?
They've only had one scene together, and it was a little while ago. So I don't blame you. But yeah, apparently the law firm really wants Sandy, so they're sweetening the pot, not just with a nice lunch, but with a surfboard.
Interesting that the card was signed by Rachel.
Was that?
And not like your friends at...
Partridge Teddy Bear Con.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
Emperor Palpatine, Darth Vader, and Baby Yoda.
Dude, I would work for that law firm. That sounds tight.
But really try to buddy up with Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Keep your distance from Palpatine and Vader.
Obviously. So Sandy, you know, he's kind of like he's kind of into possibly working at this two-thirds evil, one-third good law firm. He says that, you know, he could do more pro bono work at this job than he could as a public defender. He's just like kind of justifying it. And he's also like, the salary they offered me was outrageous. And Kirsten's pushing back on this. She's kind of like, well, you know, you can't leave the public defender's office. Like, that's your lifeblood. Like, that's what you do. And this is an interesting kind of like conflict in their marriage, because Sandy says to Kirsten, like, you like that you make more money than me. You like that I have the ideals and you have the money. He says this is the only thing separating you or keeping you from being Julie Cooper is me, is the fact that I'm like, yeah, you know, this idealistic, moralistic guy.
I also found it super interesting, actually, and I kind of flipped back and forth about whose side I was on.
Uh-huh.
Because I think Jimmy's right about Kirsten in that way.
You mean Sandy?
Like, I think Sandy was right about Kirsten in that way. Like, I think that she probably does feel a little like above everybody else, because she's like, first of all, I'm the moneymaker in the family, which is a nice, you know, dynamic for them.
Yeah.
But also, like, my husband does something good and passionate. He does what he loves, and all you husbands and whatever, you just are superficial.
Yeah.
Like, that seems accurate. But also, it does seem like Sandy or Kirsten's kind of trying to talk to him, like, from a heart place, like, we don't need the money, you know.
Yeah.
He says he wants his own money, but it's like, we're fine financially, and you love what you do, so why change that just because you kind of want independence from my money? That's very stupid and honestly kind of patriarchal, and
yeah,
you know. So I couldn't really decide whose side of the argument I was on.
Yeah,
well, in the it was like two episodes ago. You remember the scene where Jimmy and Sandy are playing golf, and Jimmy is like, that's not even, like, you didn't even buy that house. That's Kirsten, like, Kirsten makes all the money.
Yeah. Right.
And, like, calls him out on it. And, you know, like, he's always been aware of it, but it almost seems like, after hearing that, I wonder if it's in his head now of, like, oh, well, this is how people see me now. Is like,
and the $100,000 that she gave to Jimmy without talking to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's her money, she says.
I kind of wish Sandy brought these things up in this conversation.
Right.
Because right, you guys mentioning it now, it's like, oh, it like justifies Sandy's position a lot better for me to hear all this stuff. But like, he doesn't.
Also, I will argue anything Sandy Cohen does.
Kirsten giving Jimmy that money was the most fucked. It's so fucking insane to me.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how rich they're supposed to be. But 100,000, like, how rich do you have to be to where you can just, first of all, give somebody $100,000, and secondly, like, not tell your husband about it and act like it's not a big deal?
Well, Sandy
or, like,
does
tell your
say
husband after the fact,
right?
Yeah, Sandy does say at the casino when he first finds out about it, he's like, "That's more than I make in a year." And she's like, it's no big deal. So she clearly makes so much more than he does.
Right.
That she can just kind of give that money away like it's no big deal.
But it is.
And that's like one of the fucked up things about her. She's kind of a fuck. She's can be a bad. She doesn't do him that great. You know what I mean?
It's
she
just seems like to be kind of belittling Jimmy's, of his fever. Anything that Jimmy's involved
it's
in.
It's always is Jimmy. Like, yeah.
It gets real murky with Kirsten. Yeah.
He's the root of all their problems.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting scene. So we cut to outside the motel at a vending machine. It's Marissa and Ryan.
This is a tough scene.
It's a bad scene.
It's a bad it's scene. Like, I feel like this is a scene that like a
neither
high schooler.
Of them are really taking charge of this scene. And it's just kind of like, I know we need to have this scene, but it's just...
It's frustratingly it's goes kind nowhere. Of,
this scene really shows why they are not good for each other or with each other. You know what I mean? I was like, I watched a scene and I was like, I don't want them to get together.
Yeah. Because what's
like,
that going to be like?
Mopey, indecisive weirdos.
Where the contrast, you have Seth and Summer, who you're like, these two are so much fun together.
Yeah.
They're like an old married couple.
We'll get to it, but the scene the next morning with them in the diner is just...
Oh, God, it's so good.
Right.
So good.
So they're trying to pick something for dinner because I guess this is all they have. Even though I thought they had a car full of snacks. Anyway, maybe they burned through all those.
They flew out the window in that crazy car crash.
Yeah, when the car flipped accident. 8 times. So Ryan's like, cheese sticks or ding dongs? Cheese. That's what this scene is called. Cheese sticks. It's like a high schooler wrote it for like a one act play. And it's called
and
cheese
now
sticks
we present
or ding dongs.
Cheese sticks or ding dongs.
And Marissa's like, I don't know. She's like, kind of like, I don't know. And then Ryan's like, are you ever going to stop being mad at me? I wrote like their whole dialogue down.
I wrote one back and forth, but it's like it's at the end of the scene.
Yeah. Marissa's like, why would I be mad at you? Ryan says, because you walked in on me with another girl. And then Marissa says, woman. I don't know why she feels the need to make that distinction. Because
yeah, she's madder about it because
how dare you?
She's an older woman.
How dare you hook up with
a
woman?
Grown ass woman.
I mean, it's kind of gross. If nothing else,
you're right.
It was your grandpa's, your adopted grandfather's girlfriend.
Who and you're?
They didn't really give any of that relationship the like weight it deserved in that episode. By the way,
no, they're just kind of like everybody was just kind of like, yeah, that's what he does.
Like that is like a fucking crazy secret that you have for the rest of your life. Like, oh yeah, that weekend where I hooked up with my adopted grandpa's new girlfriend who was older than, who was like 20 something and I was a minor. Like it's crazy.
Yeah. It's fucking nuts.
It's like,
I wish that because like Caleb comes back later in the show and he and Ryan do not get along. And Ryan tries. Ryan does like everything he can to like get on this guy's good side, but this guy just like hates him.
Dude.
Yeah.
Muhammad, this is not the first time that Ryan hooks up with somebody of in relation to
oh my
Caleb
God.
Nichol. It
oh my God. So there's gonna be a scene where he's like, quit fucking my girlfriend.
But yeah, like Ryan never brings it up. But he should have. He's been like, hey, remember the first time you came to the Cohen's house and met me? I totally hooked up with your girlfriend.
Yeah. And Caleb would be like, who? Like, he probably wouldn't even remember her.
Gabrielle? Doesn't ring a bell.
I seem
she's
to
like
remember
a model in Japan or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so Marissa's like, it's fine that you hooked up. There's no problem with you hooking up with that woman. Ryan says, no problems, yeah, except for ding-dongs or cheese sticks. And then Marissa's like, I don't care. And then Ryan's like, well, clearly, you know, you were back with Luke, so I thought I'd hook up with this super hot hottie who wanted to hook up with me. And
yeah, the cheese sticks and ding dongs thing is like a really clumsy, not well thought out metaphor for her
exactly indecisiveness.
Like I was like, I think they're trying to make it like we're late to Ryan or Luke.
Well,
but they're which not one? Really who is which is which? It.
It's also yeah. I think Luke
Ryan is
ding dongs.
Sticks?
I think Ryan's cheese sticks because of what how the scene ends. What Marissa says at the end. So yeah. Marissa's like, well, I wasn't back together with Luke. And Ryan's like, well, you are now. And Marissa's like, do you ever wonder why I came?
Wait. Mitchell, you be Marissa, because this is the line I wrote down. You'd be Marissa and I'll be Ryan.
Where do I start? Oh, at this line?
Do you ever wonder?
Okay. I'm Marissa. Do you ever wonder? Do you ever wonder why I came to the pool house?
Every day.
He does. That's like Ryan Atwood at his best for me. Like when he's doing that, like he turns real fiercely.
He kind of
like
turns over the shoulder.
So much conviction and says it so quickly too. Like he's like stepping on her toes. She's like, do you ever want it?
Every day.
I was like, that's a fucking Ryan Atwood moment if I've ever seen.
That's another reason. And we kind of have talked about how much time has passed, but I wrote, how many days has it been since the party?
4.5 years since that
happened. Every fucking day when I wake up, it's all I think of.
I thought about it Sunday. I thought about it Monday.
Every day. And then she comes back. You mean both days?
All two of them.
Yeah, every.
And so Ryan's like, well, now's your chance. Tell me. Tell me why you came to the pool house. And Marissa just says, cheese sticks. I hate ding dongs. And that's how the scene ends. Like it's supposed to mean something.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like a weird, like it's not really clear.
Yeah.
But it seems like they kind of half wrote a metaphor there.
It's like she really can't complete it. Make any decision except cheese sticks over ding dongs.
She also in the beginning is like, I don't care. But then at the end, she's like, I hate. What? Which one does she hate?
She hates ding dongs.
She hates ding dongs.
So, why didn't... I mean, how much of a like pushover is Marissa Cooper if she's like, I don't care, and then he gets ding dongs, and she's like...
I think he's this conversation has enraged her a bit, so she's like, you know what, I am gonna
pick. I'm putting my foot down.
But also, when she sets it up for, do you ever wonder why I came to the pool house to find you? And he says, every day. And then she doesn't tell him why.
Yeah.
Yeah,
why
but
not?
It's implied. Everybody knows. Also, like, why is he wondering every day? What else
every
could
day.
You be coming there for?
She's like, hey, do you have a towel? I spilled something on my dress. Is there a towel in here I could borrow? That's why I came.
Every day!
But yeah, she cannot find it within herself to tell him why she came to that pool house. But you're right, we all know it's because
I guess that's also part of both of their characters that's a little confusing for me, is like, why all the will they won't they tension?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Luke is kind of partly that for her, just because they've been together since they were in elementary school or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to, like, hint that she's more troubled about their relationship, but it doesn't seem to make a ton of sense as to why she can't, you know, make it. Like, they did, like, did they kiss? Or they came close to kissing?
They came real close.
Yeah, they had that whole date night.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing with TV, really, though. And, like, both relationships, Ryan and Marissa and Seth and Summer, is like, they finally get together. They're together for a little while. They break up for a little while. They kind of get back together again. And it's, like, when you were talking about, like, The Office earlier, it was, like, the best seasons of The Office were, like, the Jim and Pam will they, won't they? And then when they finally get together, you're like, kind of liked it better when they were not together. Like, and so this show kind of, it's never just like, we knew love at first sight, we were together and there was no turning back. There's always different,
but that can be people. A problem in itself too, because it's like a lot of shows will well, they used to for sure, like, keep finding reasons to not get characters together. And you're like, well, come on. Like, at this point, they should just be together. Like, not even, like, out of frustration of the audience, but just, like, you're like, logically, these people should just be dating by now.
Right.
But you keep finding reasons not to, so that there can be tension there.
It's also like...
Jim and Pam was actually a good example, because it did get worse once they got together. But also... If they didn't get together in that moment, you would just be like, what the fuck are they? Like, what is going on? How many times can they not get together?
They should have just ended the show there. Just fucking cut it off. They're like, it's going to be downhill from here anyway. So then we go to the motel room where Seth is sitting on the bed trying to watch TV. But alas, this shitty, shitty hotel doesn't even have TV. It's just static. Summer enters in like kind of like her 90, and Seth's just kind of like, whoa,
yeah, whoa. It took me a while to try to find the right wording to describe her pajamas without sounding like a real creep, but I'm glad we all noticed it, because they were not just like hanging out with dudes who aren't
They're date night pajamas.
They're dress pajamas. You'd buy that at Victoria's Secret. It's not like lingerie,
but it's sexy pajamas.
It's sexy pajamas, for sure.
It's confusing as to why she changed into them, but then I thought, like, yeah, she's a horny teenager. Like, as much as she's playing it cool, I'm sure she's, like, kind of enjoying the flirtation and the, you know what I mean? Because why not just sleep in your clothes? That's like the normal thing to do in that situation.
Especially in that gross ass motel. Like,
yeah.
I think that's what every other character does. But she was like, no.
Nobody changes out of their clothes except for Summer.
Go figure. So Summer's like, get off the bed. I want to sleep in the bed. Be a gentleman. And Seth says, chivalry's dead, sugar. Which is like very telling of the time and place that this took place. I'm not gonna be nice to girls anymore.
It's 2003.
2003. Get used to it. And so Summer,
I listen to Death Cab. I know how to treat a woman poorly.
So Summer's just like, fine, whatever. And she gets in the bed next to Seth, and she says, "If you make a move, I will rip out your jugular." Which is
this felt very real to me too, by the way, like of high school flirtations. I don't know if it.
Oh, like sleeping in the same bed with a girl.
Yeah, just like finding excuses to sleep in the same bed.
Yeah,
I don't know. It felt very.
I did wonder, like, why didn't Marissa and Summer sleep in a bed, and then Ryan and Seth sleep in a bed? Like,
right, that would make
it's cause,
kind of more sense. But
yeah,
again, this is what teenagers, you know, do, and to a certain extent. It's like you find weird excuses to be flirty, weird excuses to touch each other.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're not crazy about the person, like even if you don't have feelings for the person, you might still do that just because it's exciting to act like that, and you don't really think about any repercussions because you're fucking 17 or whatever.
Yeah, they kind of bully each other into like staying on the bed.
Yeah.
Because Summer's like, I don't want to sleep on that gross-ass pull-out couch bed. And then she's like, you sleep on it. And he's like, after you made it sound so appealing, no, I'm going to stay here. Right. And she's like, well, I'm not sleeping on it either. I'm sleeping in the bed with you. And Seth's like reaction when she gets in the bed is kind of like, oh, God.
Yeah, you know his inner monologue is just like, holy shit. Holy fucking shit. Yeah. I can't believe it's working.
Yeah. So then we cut to the outside of the motel room with Ryan and Marissa coming back with their cheese sticks, I'm assuming. And
Marissa hates ding-dongs.
Fucking hates them.
So Ryan...
What are ding-dongs?
They're those cupcakes, like,
with
you know,
packaged
cupcakes with a swirl, like, yeah, and then the cream filling.
How do you hate that?
I know, by the way, those things are fucking fantastic.
Yeah. If it was like some sort of like strawberry filled thing, I would get that because, you know, strawberry. It's kind of a personal preference, but like those are universally loved Ding Dongs. Get real, Marissa.
Yeah. It's like hating an Oreo.
Yeah. What the fuck? Hating a chocolate chip cookie. Get real.
Get out of here.
So
Marissa sucks.
Right.
Marissa likes savory. She doesn't like sweet.
I can understand that, actually. I'm a savory boy.
Also, by the way, if I was talking about what should we have for dinner, I'd probably go for cheese sticks over Ding Dongs, too.
Yeah, I feel like...
But I would never say, I hate Ding Dongs.
Yeah, I'd be like, that's more of a dessert. Actually, let's get both. Why can't you just get both?
Yeah, why not just get both?
Well, Ryan's, you know, he's I don't know how much of the Cohen's money he has, and then Marissa's dad is... lost $400 million or something insane.
Yeah, that's true.
How much did he, like, is he on the hook for?
He lost the GDP of India. No, he lost $4 million. Still a hefty chunk of change, but yeah, I would assume Ryan has like tip money or something from his job.
Sure.
He could throw a couple extra bucks in there, get both.
You think he's got like $3 worth of tip money? Because I feel like you could get Ding Dongs and cheese fries for that much.
I would hope so. But so they're outside the room and Ryan goes in and Marissa gets a phone call. And so she hangs out in the parking lot while she takes the phone call. And who is on the other end of the phone, but the father of the year, Jimmy Little Cooper. Teeth. Little teeth, okay. Jimmy Cooper.
Tiny teeth.
Tiny teeth.
Fucking Grimace Jimmy. Face himself.
So I actually really like the lighting in both of these scenes. So there's like a strong kind of orange glow, I guess, from like the neon sign or something that's hitting Marissa, and it's just like one single light. So there's a lot of heavy shadows and stuff. And then same with Jimmy, he's kind of like on the floor of his apartment and there's like a strong light coming through the blinds, kind of creating that.
Jimmy looks like he's about to start singing My Father's Eyes. Or he looks like he's in like an adult like calming music video.
100%, dude. Yeah, his shirt's like unbuttoned and his sleeves are rolled off. So Jimmy tells Marissa, when you get home, I'm not going to be there. And Ryan overhears this from the motel room as he's like, pulling out the sofa bed.
You know why?
Because he hears everything.
Because Ryan hears everything.
Old eagle ear Ryan Atwood.
There was a line I forgot to bring up when they were back at, when Seth is eavesdropping back at the Crab Shack.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan was like, are you eavesdropping? And Seth goes, I hear like a wolf. Which I've never heard anyone say before, but I really like it. I hear like a wolf.
You know how wolves are famous for having good hearing?
That's how they catch all their prey. They hear it.
They hear them first. They get them.
Get a tattoo of Seth Cohen's face with the words underneath inscribed.
I hear like a wolf. So, Jimmy, with the...
You think anybody has the OC tattoo?
I'm sure somebody has something related to the OC tattooed on them. I mean, people have more obscure things than that tattooed on them.
Sure.
And this show does have the show has a subreddit, so.
Yeah.
It's not super active, but I mean, it's there. And it's 2020. So, Ryan overhears this. Jimmy's like, I'm sorry, kiddo. It's sad, and Marissa's crying, and Ryan's taking it all in. We go into the motel room, Marissa enters, and she's upset, and she just kind of sits on the bed sobbing, and Ryan just tells her, I'm sorry. Marissa says, thanks, and then she lies down on the bed, Ryan lies down on the bed. And then we get this kind of like wide shot, this overhead bird's eye, where we see all the kids laying in bed, all of them with their backs to each other. And they're all just kind of like
all doing the same like sleeping position. Yeah. This was what I said was the artsy shot of the episode. Cause it kind of pans out overhead and you just see them all. And I was watching it and I went,
that's a good one. It's always a bird's eye shot. Like, that's always like the artsy shot of the show. Because I think the last episode it was Ryan and Seth in the pool and the camera was spinning as it was pulling in, but it was still a bird's eye. I mean, yep. It looks artistic. So then we go to the next morning in the hotel room. And first we see the bed and we see Seth and Summer are gone. And then the camera slowly moves over to the sofa bed. And it reveals that Ryan has like put his arm around Marissa at some point in the night. And they're kind of spooning. And Marissa wakes up, but Ryan's still asleep, as far as we know. And she's like,
they're spooning super hardcore.
She's so cool with it.
I know. It was very sweet. It's a very nice moment. But they are like, I wrote down, that's intentional. That's not like accidental in your sleep spooning.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's like holding her hand.
Yeah.
Like, that's that's a very conscious move.
Yeah. At some point, you know, like they started with their backs to each other. And at some point in the night, Marissa's probably just like crying and crying and crying. And Ryan's just like, I wouldn't even consider it him making a move. Like, it's purely him like consoling her. Like, I doubt he tried to like, you know, do anything more than that. He was just trying to comfort her in that moment.
Or he was dreaming about punching someone and he like actually just like punched the air and did a complete like spin around.
Yep. And then Marissa just grabbed his fist and then his fist loosened and then grabbed her hand. Oh my God, it was beautiful. And so then Ryan wakes up and he says, you know, sorry, I'm spooning you right now. And Marissa's just like, it's okay.
He even like nuzzles her back a little bit before he like gets up. He like rubs his face into her shoulders.
Guys, we all know that they're so into each other and
it was nice to see.
It was nice.
All the emotions just melted away for a minute and they just got to be a little physical with each other.
Yeah, and they just had a nice little intimate moment by themselves.
And then he went, cheese sticks, and she went, ding dongs.
Let's eat. Then we cut to a diner.
This is my favorite scene of the whole episode.
It's pretty great.
So bizarre.
It is
the
weird
way it like starts.
Yeah,
it's so interesting and strange, and like from, it felt like it was referencing something that nobody knows about except for Josh Schwartz,
like a Woody Allen movie or something. But yeah, it's Seth and Summer are sitting across the table from each other. They're both like reading newspapers, and I feel like they both like turn the page at the same time or something. It's just like
everything is in
sync.
They
swap with each other. They read and then they swap papers.
Oh, like kind of instinctually
they read each other's papers.
Trade papers, like they've been doing it for years.
But everything is on like a rhythm.
Yes.
Yeah. He slides his toast over to her.
She takes the toast, eats the toast. They don't even like acknowledge each other. It's all like clockwork, right? And they both take a sip of their coffee at the same time, and then they kind of like catch each other, like they're what's going on here?
Too in sync.
Yeah, what are we getting along or something?
I mean, granted, if I did that with anybody, if I was that in sync like that with anybody, I would also have that reaction of like, "Whoa, what the fuck just happened?"
are we just soulmates? Like,
completely in rhythm for a second.
That was pretty cool, but no. Instead, Seth says like, I think you like me, Summer. I think you like me. And he recalls the kiss at Caleb's birthday. Summer says two words, no tongue, which I guess if you kiss somebody like that and you don't use tongue, then you don't necessarily
doesn't count
like them. It doesn't count. Seth says, you rode with me down here to Tijuana. Summer says, well, I needed a ride. Seth says, you slept in the same bed as me last night. And Summer says, the couch was gross. So she's got a rebuttal for every point that Seth tries to make. The fact that in his defense of Summer liking him, he says, our chemistry is undeniable, which I can't argue with that one. Look at them at this breakfast table.
Yeah. Did you not just see
the playful fighting with each other? It's very endearing.
Yeah. And Summer's response to this is, what's undeniable is the pain that this fork will cause when I jam it in your eye. And then this is the first time we hear of Summer's rage blackouts, which I think is kind of an excuse for being an asshole.
This is a recurring thing, Mohammed. She brings up her rage blackout.
Well, it happens later on in this episode.
Two or three times in this episode, it's brought up, and this is the first one. So we get some callbacks coming up, guys. Don't worry.
Like I said, this episode really, this was the first time I really, really liked Summer.
Yeah.
Summer's character.
Yeah.
And this is all part of it. Like, even that diner scene, like, we're used to Seth being charming. Mm-hmm. And we're also used to Summer being an asshole. But she's, like, being an asshole in this scene and being charming at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's a charming sort of tease, you know, meanness that she's got going on.
Well, that was the whole thing of going back and rewatching this, because comparatively, I would say like 80% of the series, she's very likable and very like, she's, whenever there's a scene with her, you're excited that she's on screen. So rewatching it and just seeing how awful she is in the first couple episodes, you're like, oh yeah, I forgot. She starts off really bad.
Just the worst, yeah. Seth gets out of the scene with a really good check, please. Because she's like, oh, just have this fork in your eye. Yeah. Like,
check, please.
I love a good check, please.
Even Seth's, like, clear, like, comedy ability feels very high school to me, too. Like it's all things that he's, like, aware of because of pop culture, like the check please moment.
Yep.
It just feels like, oh yeah, he saw that in a fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember doing things like that in high school, because you're like, yeah, this is a funny thing that people do, yeah. And I'm a funny guy, so I'll do a check please move.
Oh, I still do it. I love a good check please. So then we cut to the motel room with Ryan's in there, and Seth and Summer enter with like breakfast for them and like so much coffee. Like, these kids drink so much coffee.
So much.
And Summer's like, where's Marissa? Calls her Coop. Ryan's like, she's in the shower.
I think it's cool that she calls her Coop.
It's a cool name, yeah. Seth says, we need to hit the road. Ryan says, might not go to Tijuana. Marissa's dad called. And then Marissa enters.
Yeah, which is confusing, because he asked her in the last scene with them what she wants to do, and she says she wants to stay. Right?
What scene? Marissa says that?
Yeah, right before she gets in the shower, he's like, well, what do you want to do? You want to go home? And she goes, no, I think I want to stay.
No. That's coming up. Marissa's going to say that now.
No, I'm telling you. When they wake up and she goes to take a shower, he asks, like, well, what do you want to do? And she says, I think I want to stay.
Really?
I took that as her meaning, I don't want to go to Tijuana. Let's just stay here for a little while.
Oh, yeah, oh. Maybe. But she does say that. And then when they get back, they're like, what do you want to... They're like, what's going on? And he's like, I don't know if we're going to go to Tijuana. And I was like, I thought you guys already discussed that. But maybe she did mean she just wants to stay in the motel.
I guess.
And just spoon with Ryan for a little while.
Or maybe like, let's not go to breakfast. But they didn't even know where they were.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Unclear.
It doesn't matter.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, Marissa enters. She like does not say a word in this scene. Like, everybody's kind of talking for her. Which is weird.
She does her patented, like, she walks out of the bathroom and everyone looks at her, and she does her, like, shoulders come up, mm-hmm. and she kind of, like, looks to the side.
Why is everybody looking at me? And Summer figures it out. You know, she's like, oh, your parents are getting a divorce. Marissa just nods, like, yep, that's happening. Summer says, as a child of divorce, don't go home. It's not going to be fun there. Tijuana is going to be fun. Let's go to Tijuana. And Seth agrees. He says, for once, Summer, you're right. And then Summer kind of gives him a look. He's like, rage blackouts, got it. I'll be in the car. And then he That's a callback. So they're going to Tijuana, but under kind of stressful circumstances, at least from Marissa's perspective. But hey, guys, the time has come. We're in Tijuana, baby.
We made it.
A sign that says, welcome to Tijuana. You can be arrested for immoral conduct.
Yep. I wrote that down too. And that's how you know that they just, they market this place to shithead high schoolers. Because that's the welcoming sign.
I don't even think it was like a bigger... I don't even think Tijuana was in like a larger font. I think it was all just like Times New Roman. Welcome to Tijuana. You can be arrested for immoral conduct. No punctuation.
Yep, Tijuana. I guess it's basically saying like, we're known for people being immoral here. Yeah. So
everything in Tijuana made me feel very nervous and claustrophobic. Like the walking through the streets and stuff. I was like, oh.
Well, that we'll get to that. That like the whole last couple minutes of the episode,
for sure.
The crowd is
like, but even like when they first show up, which I guess that's not this scene either. We don't see that until after, right? I don't know. But when they're like walking through the streets and talking,
yeah.
Oh, it made me feel very claustrophobic. It's like the camera's behind a bunch of people, so everybody's crossing. Like,
yeah, crossing in front. Yeah.
I was like, ooh, I don't like this.
I did notice.
Because you've been quarantined for months, and the idea of of people walking around is terrifying.
That's true. I am claustrophobic in general, though crowds don't really get me. But something about the way it was shot just made me feel like I was enclosed into a space.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just a hot street full of drunk people.
Yeah. I guess there was not like there's like the establishing wide.
Yeah.
But not like really a very wide shot of them in the scene. So it's like really tight on them with a bunch of people all around the whole time.
Yeah. I think they probably couldn't get a wide because they were, you know, shooting in Los Angeles. So they could hey, it's Mexico. It's like, no, it's Burbank. So the kids exit the hotel. They got a hotel room. Two hotel rooms. And then Seth says, rooms. He's like, I'll give you a key, Summer. And then Summer says, so I can come smother you with a pillow. Again, just fun. Just fun bickering between these two.
I'm into it. I like this.
Marissa says that everybody's probably at Boom Booms. How you guys feel about
what is
boom
that Spanish?
Booms?
Oh, she's right. They were all
at Boom Booms.
Boom Booms was lit.
Boom Booms was
boom
lit.
Boom. We'll get to Boom Booms in a second.
But again, that's why you go to Tijuana. You can drink underage.
Yeah.
You know, why do anything other than be at a bar?
No, absolutely. You know, if I'm 18 and I can go to a place and order a drink, come on. It's the best.
I went to the same shitty pizza place when I was 19. Because they would serve free beer.
Ashley and I had our first date at this place. I won't say the name because I don't want to out them because I want kids to drink there underage. But near Georgia State campus, there's a place where you could just order pitchers of beer and they don't card.
Yeah, the pizza place, right? That's the place I was talking about. I know.
All right, yeah. Okay. Hey, now.
Best kept secret for those.
I love the idea that we think that... there are like police listening to this, and they're like,
"Hey, if there are cops podcast, listening, fuck you."
Yeah, fuck you, cops. Get fucked.
So,
that place can't still exist, right?
I hope it does, because that's it's a magical little place in the heart of downtown. So Summer got a little exposition.
Oh, by the way,
here.
The first time I went in there, I was solo,
and
I didn't know they only served pitchers of beer. But I had my heart set on getting beer because I heard that I could do that. So I got a pitcher of beer to myself.
Oh my God, dude.
Nice.
Sat by myself and drank it by myself.
Badass.
Yeah.
I probably did that too at some point. So Summer says they're in the streets and they're like walking around. Marissa's like, let's go to Boom Booms. Summer's like, I got to swing by the pharmacy to get painkillers for my stepmom because she's out of them and you don't need a prescription. Anytime Summer's stepmom is brought up, it's just like sad. It's just like,
it's always in reference to her addiction to prescription pills.
Yeah, and how like existentially depressed she is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, yeah, it's like a moment of like severe dread.
We don't see her parents at all, right?
You see her dad, but you never see the stepmom.
Yeah, we see her dad. Stepmom doesn't exist. Like,
well, we haven't seen her dad yet, have we?
No. He's later.
Okay.
He's like season, maybe in this season.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, this is a like ongoing joke that we thought was funnier in 2003 than now. We're just like, aw.
Right. Oh, yeah, there's a fucking pandemic of people addicted to pills.
Yeah.
So Marissa, I guess Marissa and Ryan are going to Boom Boom's, which is where Luke's going to be. And Marissa's like, is that cool? And Ryan's like, yeah, whatever, I don't care. And then Seth and Summer are going to the pharmacy because Seth also needs an antihistamine. He has allergies. Then we cut to a restaurant patio where Sandy and Rachel are having lunch. Rachel... This scene basically exists. Rachel can tell Sandy, like, the clock is ticking.
Better be a heck of a lunch callback.
Oh, I hear the... What do they say? The sand crabs are delicious. What is it?
Something like that.
Something like that. Here.
Yeah, sand crabs.
Aren't all crabs sand crabs? Something. I don't know.
Those water crabs.
So...
This will have a pound of the crabs. Sand or water?
Water?
Half and half.
Rachel informs Sandy that the offer is rescinding tomorrow, so the offer is off the table for him to work there tomorrow. Sandy says he's still out. Rachel says, you're better than that. Sandy says, I did like beating you, which is like, okay, what's going on here? I don't know. And then Rachel says, it's because I was excellent.
It's still defense,
huh?
Right?
Defense attorneys?
Yeah.
So
what did he beat her?
What did he beat her
defense
at?
Attorneys.
Pool? They just play darts?
Sometimes they have lawyer offs.
Yeah.
Just kind of like,
who can lawyer the best?
The annual lawyer offs here in Southern California, Newport Beach.
Yeah. So this scene you get, I don't know. Like I was picking up vibes between Sandy and Rachel in this scene. I was just like, maybe he wants the job. Maybe he just wants to spend more time with Rachel. I don't know. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's Sandy Cohen.
I'm sure I got up and did something else during the scene because I don't give a shit.
You're right. It's boring. Let's move out. Let's move along.
He's a charming guy. So it always, well, not like very often when he is like talking to a woman, you're like, is he flirting with her? But it's like, no, he's just like charming and nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And that looks like flirting to a lot of people, I guess. Then we cut to Jimmy's apartment, speaking of flirting. And guess who's there? Kirsten. Once again, she's like screwing in a light bulb or something now. It's like, Jimmy, can't you do anything? She's just like this woman.
Any fucking free time she has, she's going to be like helping Jimmy do something.
She probably should have just stayed.
Am I remembering correctly that she like steps up on the ladder, screws in the light bulb, and then goes, there, done.
Well, that's it.
It took fucking all day. Or like Jimmy called her. Jimmy was like, hey, do you think you have a second to come over? I got this light bulb that needs to be screwed in.
I'm scared of climbing ladders.
You know, I get nosebleeds if I go past the second rung.
It's just all this stuff, you know, with the family and light bulb. Like, don't worry. I'm on my way. Anything for my oldest friend.
Oh, this scene begins like in the middle of a sentence, which I thought was really weird. So, like, the scene starts, and Jimmy says, of course she would be, but telling her you were totally right. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, it comes in literally on the middle of the sentence, and I got no context.
I bet it was going to be one of those Josh Schwartz moments.
What do you mean?
And then they cut off the whatever scene or line of dialogue preceded it that was they were going to cut to.
Yeah. Oh.
Like Marissa and Summer or something talking about her parents.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're probably right. And that's where and the scene started, but they had to cut for time.
They didn't never record any they didn't line get a from safety. Jimmy that made sense without it.
Yeah, in case that didn't work. But yeah, I just thought that was really strange. Anyway, Kirsten's putting in the light bulb. Jimmy is, check out my swinging new bachelor pad. I've never been a bachelor. I guess I went from you because we dated. Because remember when we dated and we fucked? Remember when we dated? I went from you to Julie. And then he asks her if she ever has doubts about Sandy, about her and Sandy's relationship. It's I'm like,
just so inappropriate. Fuck,
dude, yeah. Seriously. I know where you're going with this, and I do not like it. Kirsten says, what you say? You say, like, we have our issues, but, you know, we're fine. Like, I don't know what you're doing here, Jimmy. And then Jimmy says the next worst thing you can say, which is, do you ever wonder what would happen if you and me like, stayed together?
This is why I think Kirsten's a little complicit, though.
100%.
In all of this.
Yeah.
Because, like, first of all, lay down the fucking law, and this is not something that is new with Jimmy.
Yeah.
Like, just fuck, even if you want to still be his best friend or whatever, just be like, hey, you need to chill.
You can't do this shit, man.
Like, yeah. Yeah,
for real. It's embarrassing.
And then secondly, like, if you're maybe afraid of the confrontation or something, at least hint towards, like, if somebody asked me that and I was in a relationship and I did not want this person, you know, hitting on me, I would just be like, everything's great. Yeah, we are fucking 100%.
Yeah.
Never have any doubts. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. I'm going to call him right now. I'm going to call him right now. But, yeah. Just tell him I love him. No, you're right. She's being a bit complicit. I think, I don't know. Like, I'm always like, oh, she's just trying to, like, sympathize with him or something by saying, like, hey, no marriage is perfect. Like, don't feel bad. You're getting divorced or whatever. But you're right. Like, what is she even doing there? Screwing in a light bulb? Come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other part is, like, she's got to know that he doesn't need that much help.
Yeah.
That it's partly because he wants to see her, you know?
And then...
I wonder, too, though, if it's, like, because she doesn't really have friends. Like, she's not really friends with any of the noopsies.
That's true.
So it's kind of like, her husband, I think it's just like, yeah, I'm going to go help Jimmy paint his apartment because he's my friend.
My and only friend.
Really have...
And you have lunch
date with Rachel. I agree with you guys that it's... She's not handling this scene in particularly well.
No.
Yeah.
Jimmy's kind of blindsiding her right now. He's just he just starts hitting on her.
She should climb back
nowhere.
Up on that ladder, unscrew that light bulb, and leave.
Yeah. Smash it on the ground so, because Jimmy's barefoot, he can't like follow her without stepping on broken glass. So yeah, Jimmy asks her if she ever wonders if they had stayed together, and she's like, sometimes. And I chalk it up to her being polite, but I'm also like, come on, Kirsten, don't you give this guy an inch? He's taking him up. Also, like Jimmy, Mr. Like, I can't do anything that's difficult. Like, I can't tell my daughter that I'm getting divorced, but I can like straight up mack on this married lady, like without any sort of like qualms about that. Come on,
well,
Jimmy.
That comes easy to him. That's not difficult.
Yeah, him hitting on Kirsten, that's second nature. Kirsten finishes the screwing in the light bulb. Finally, she kind of like stumbles off the ladder as she's coming down.
Yeah,
and Jimmy catches her, and we get an extreme close up of Jimmy's like hand on Kirsten's lower back as he catches her, and then she's like, I'm getting the vibe that she's kind of like, okay, you can let go of me now, and then Jimmy just like goes in. No, Muhammad?
She's fucking into it? Nodding her head.
She's nodding that her
has
head.
She's to be nodding like... yes at him. If you watch the scene, she's just saying... She does it twice, actually.
That seems like poor editing. I'm going to have to rewatch it.
I don't know if that's intentional for the character or what, but she's like... Because the look on her face, I will give you that. The look on her face isn't the most inviting, yeah. But it's also not the most...
Dismissive?
Like, she could just look away. She's still, like, looking at him in the eyes, you know? And then she fucking nods. She nods yes twice.
Bro, I gotta see this nod. I'm actually on the scene right now as we speak. Okay. So here, I'm gonna watch it.
Can you share the screen? Can we all
look at it? Yeah, great point. Let's all look at it. So, share screen.
I think that if she's nodding yes, it's because Jimmy... After she fell off the ladder, goes, "Did you just fall off the ladder?" And she went, "Yes."
I cut out the question.
Are you okay?
Right. Look at this thing. Face that he's doing.
It's fucking classic dumb Jimmy face. All right,
I'm backing it up. So here she goes off the ladder. Oop, little tumble, oh. Grabs. He didn't even need to do that.
Too. All right, watch. Nod. Right there.
I don't know about... Okay, that's a...
Another one, right there, right nod. Before the kiss. That's two
a
nod. Nods.
That's a nod. You're absolutely right. But it's the back of her head. I want to see what her face is like when she's not. I rewound it. First one as a nod. When the camera's on her,
look,
she's kind of smiling. He's kind of smiling.
I think she's
that's a nod.
Like,
she gives,
she's trying I mean, to like not make eye contact with him.
That's a nod.
But he goes
no,
in for the kiss.
She's
he goes
fucking
in,
looking right in his eyes and nodding her head. Yes.
He goes in for the kiss and she doesn't even really reciprocate the kiss. Like her mouth's still open.
She doesn't.
He kisses her upper lip and she's just immediately like backs off and she's like, "Whoa, dude, let's."
But she doesn't back off when he's making the move.
No.
You can also not be kissed.
I mean, yeah, you're right. She's like, she's not. She could get out
nod,
right now.
Guys.
She could
that
get out.
That is a nod, and there's no denying that.
Yeah.
I'm not.
You caught the nod.
I
didn't
say
catch the nod.
It is uncertain if that's a character choice or the actress. I don't know because it's a little confusing.
The focus is on Jimmy in that moment. A nod. Like, I feel like if they wanted to project the nod, if they wanted to project that, like, Kirsten was into it, then they would have
right.
They would have been the camera would have been on her while she nodded, but instead
right,
it was on
exactly.
Jimmy.
So
it's a dirty like over the shoulder shot. So you know, it focuses on Jimmy. You can see the back of her head, but you're not even as an audience. You're not really supposed to be paying attention to the back of her head in that shot. But
sure,
anyway, she
sure.
pulls away as soon as his lips touch her upper lip because she doesn't even like close her lips for the kiss. And then Jimmy just immediately like starts apologizing. She's like, "I gotta go." He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just crazy right now."
He does, like immediately. Yeah. "I'm sorry. Sorry. So stupid.
Oh, Jimmy. Jimmy
screwed it up again, Jimmy.
Jimmy screw up. That's what they call you. That's what you'll
Jimmy
always be.
Jimmy screw up."
And then before she's like, wait, one more thing. Could I borrow $100,000?
Check, please. So then we go to Boom Booms. Jay.
Yeah.
Is Boom Booms the bait shop?
No, the bait shop what? Is just called the bait shop.
No, but I mean the set.
Oh, interesting.
Ooh,
maybe.
All right, I'm going to share my screen.
There is an upstairs area. It seemed like...
Well, the bar looked like it could have been that same bar in the bait shop.
I think
shop,
it is the bait shop, because it's... Here, it's coming up on... Let me mute it. It's coming up after this scene. Kirsten's like, "I can get the fuck out of here." Jimmy's like, sorry.
She's like, "How could I have let things get this far? I just gave him $100,000 and every step of his divorce." And...
All right, check it out.
All right.
So strippers are on the stage...
It looks bigger, but, you know, that's editing.
And then check... Okay, so the catwalk, the upstairs, the stage is there, and then the bar.
That's, dude, it might be the bait shop. I think you're right.
I think it is the same set as the bait shop.
The bar looks like the bait shop, for sure.
Yeah.
But with a bunch of shit on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't
have
the Walkman
the shop,
on the stage. You got strippers.
Oh, wait. No, I'm thinking of the restaurant.
The bait shop
you
is
guys
in
are talking about
no,
season two. Later on.
Season two, Olivia Wilde is introduced, and she is the manager of the coolest venue in all of Newport called the Bait Shop, where bands like The Walkmen and Modest Mouse and The Killers play.
Right. And I heard you guys talk about it. Wait, did you say Olivia Wilde?
Yep. Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
But also, I feel dumb because I thought you guys were talking about the restaurant. I was like, the bar could be the same bar.
Oh, the Crab Shack?
But I did not recognize an upstairs bar.
No.
So that's,
what's the fucking restaurant called?
The Crab Shack.
I think it's just, yeah, I don't know the name of it. We just call it the Crab Shack. But anyway, I think it's, so yeah, the Bait Shop comes in much later, season two.
I think it's the same set. They reused it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Anyway, so the Bait Shop's in Tijuana.
Good job, production.
So yeah, we got body shots. We got, like, I guess strippers, but it's, you know, network TV, so they're in bikinis. And Luke is there, and he's just fucking pounding them, like tequila shot after tequila shot.
With the boys.
And then Holly comes up to Luke, and she instructs him to back that ass up.
She sure does. Oh, the nice little flip of gender norms, I thought.
Yeah.
She comes up, and she goes, hey, Luke, back that ass up. And like grabs him from behind. Jeez. And then Luke, by the way, says, I wrote it down. He says, no, that's cool.
Luke has so many great lines like that.
He goes, no, that's cool.
No, that's cool. I'm all set. And then Holly's like, well, Marissa ain't coming. And then she starts getting like,
Holly's horny.
Aggressively horny towards Luke.
Yeah,
and Luke's just kind of like,
Holly's real thirsty.
Yeah.
And Luke is immediately like, oh yeah, she isn't coming.
Okay, this is fine. And then the kids enter, Marissa, Ryan, Seth, and Summer all come in.
Wait, Holly also says, she says, come on, I love this song.
Yeah, what the fucking song is it?
It's a Chemical Brothers song.
Oh.
From like the mid-90s.
Very cool, Holly.
I just thought it was funny that Holly would like that song.
Something tells me,
I love this fucking like weird indie techno song.
Yeah, something tells me any song could have been playing and she would have been like, I love this song.
Right. She's on ecstasy.
It's like put the lime in the coconut, take them all up. She's like, I fucking love this song. I'm
proud to be an American. Why are they playing that in Tijuana? But anyway, Holly loves that song too.
Boom, booms. So they go to the dance floor, which is upstairs.
What's up? They enter from upstairs?
They go up to the dance floor, it's upstairs. So when Ryan and Marissa and Seth and Summer come in, they don't see them there.
Correct. Because
they're upstairs.
But Marissa's looking for him. Marissa's there to find Luke. So the kids enter and we see like a wet t-shirt situation happening. And then Seth says, I love authentic Mexican culture.
Yeah, that's a good line.
That's a good one. And then Ryan laughs. And anytime Ryan laughs, my heart leaps because he's so severe all the time. So whenever Seth can get a chuckle out of him, I'm like, oh, that's a great moment between these two.
I know you guys have said it before, but I could just watch a show about Seth and Ryan like becoming best friends.
They're so great together.
I wish that's all the show was, but unfortunately there's all kinds of bullshit
also,
drama.
Also, as somebody who, I mean, I think the three of us, we like to make people laugh, and there's certain people that are harder to make laugh. I feel like Seth,
right.
If Seth can get Ryan to laugh, he's like, fucking,
I know,
so
right?
Good
it
about
must feel
it.
So good to get a chuckle out of that guy.
You're like the funniest man in the world if you can make Ryan laugh. Yeah.
You guys have talked a few times on the show about how you're both kind of were Seths in high school, and it made me think of like who I was and like which character. But I'm none of them.
You were.
There's
Luke.
No fucking like. There needs to be a ducky. There needs to be like a nerdy theater kid who really liked attention. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought for a minute. I thought like maybe like Luke, but Luke's such an
you're
asshole.
You're not a Luke.
And I wasn't an
you're
asshole.
No, Luke.
No, like I would. I wasn't a bully. I wasn't an asshole. I didn't cheat on girls.
I mean, the crew.
I just also was like a good time guy.
Yeah, the crew's kind of small, but it expands later on. Like different characters, auxiliary characters start showing up. So I hope you find.
I tell you who I was.
You were kind of like an Olivia Wilde.
Yeah,
I was the guy at the Chino party. that was like, did you see what they did to that car? That was me.
You were
just like enjoying fucking parties and like, yeah, cracking jokes.
Oh, you. So yeah, they go to the bar. Girls come by with squirt guns with like tequila in them, I assume, and they're squirting them into the Ryan and Seth's mouths. And I just imagine that happening in a post COVID world. And I'm like, there's just no way.
No.
No.
You guys want to get shot in the mouth with tequila? No, thank you.
No, I'll hard pass.
Did you guys ever do a shot out of a gun or like?
Yeah, I think it was like Dragon Con.
Looked like a real gun, but you just tipped it back. It didn't even shoot or anything. But
there's always people at Dragon Con walking around with squirt guns full of liquor. So I feel like I probably did that when I was younger and dumber. Like right now I would be like, no, fuck, I don't know what's in there. Fuck you.
Yeah.
So the girls are doing shots. So they're all drinking. They're all partying, having a good time. Luke and Holly are getting busy on the dance floor upstairs. Ryan and Marissa.
I described it as dance fucking.
It's hard grinding.
It was like the scene from the second Matrix movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that that's the reference you pulled of all the dirty dancing, grinding scenes out there. You're like,
that was the only other one. I was like, there's this scene and there's the one in the Matrix.
It's like orgy dancing.
The two scenes of dance fuck.
Dance fuck. Ryan and Marissa are kind of walking. They're smiling at each other. And then Marissa spots Luke with Holly. Luke sees Marissa busted, dip to commercial, come right back. Boom. Right where we left off. I love that when a show just like dips to black and then just starts up like the camera never cut.
Especially watching it now, like without any commercial breaks.
Yeah.
So it's just like cut to black and then it's right. It's like you just blinked back for a really long time.
Yeah. I hate tequila. I don't know if it's the opposite, but when they like recap the last like 4 seconds when they come back.
Oh, yeah.
And they show you what like the 4 seconds that you already seen. And sometimes it's like a different take and you're like, whoa, is this a alternate reality or did they repeat themselves?
Yeah, or it's like
they
a like line that kind of
two angles
catches you up. Yeah. But now they come back from commercial and Marissa's just like, how could you? And then Luke with some
her reaction's good, by the way. I thought she did a good job.
She's really
scene.
Good at being distressed. That's mostly how she is. Luke is like, I'm sorry, with some bad ADR. He says, I'm sorry. Summer says, Holly, you bitch. Holly says, please.
She was so good.
Yeah. She's a good bro. Holly says, please. Luke hooks up with everyone, even freshmen. Like, she points out, he's hooking up with freshmen. He's hooking up with all these other people. I'm like, oh, that's
college
gross.
Girls, freshmen and college girls.
He's hooking up with like, so everybody.
He runs the gamut.
And she says, everybody knows. And then Marissa's like devastated. She storms out. Summer yells at Holly, her parents are getting divorced, you slut. It's like a great line.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And then pushes her.
Summer's Summer's just ready to fucking tear Holly's eyeball.
Summer pushes her hard. I thought she was gonna like fall off of the balcony or like,
get, like
she pushes
impaled.
Her like into the railing.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth gets Summer because rage blackouts and saves Holly's life by pulling Summer away. I think that's the last time we have to hear about rage blackouts this episode. Luke starts to go after Marissa, but Ryan stops him. And Ryan says, like, just let her go, man. And Luke says, this isn't about you. And Ryan says, it is now. And then he punches him.
Yep.
I think this is the last time we see Ryan punch Luke.
Oh, really?
And he makes it count.
That's a good punch.
He slugs them, but then he gets slugged back, which I always appreciate in their fights. They both hit each other.
They go toe to toe,
And then a bunch of random dudes all start fighting.
So Ryan,
that's a bar
he actually
fight.
says, It is now. She doesn't deserve you. Then he punches him, and Luke's like drunk. So Luke like punches some random guy, right? And then,
oh, really?
And that's where the brawl starts. So the random guy like fighting Luke, and then other guys jump in, and then it's just like a fucking brawl.
No, that boom, works. Booms. I've seen Shanghai Noon.
Yeah, you know how just brawls start.
Just another Saturday night at Boom Booms. Know what I mean?
So then
Shanghai Boom Boom. That's the newest one.
All the kids bail, and then we're in the streets of Tijuana, feeling claustrophobic. Summer says, "I'll check the hotel." Ryan says, "I'll check the streets." And then we go to the hotel.
He's like, "That's what I know best."
Yeah, I know about streets. I know where to look. I know who to ask. And then we cut to the hotel room, and Marissa's there, and she's just like sobbing. She's having a rough day. Summer enters.
I think it's funny that they were all like, "Let's split up and find her," and then she just went back to the hotel.
After this. Oh, we'll get there. So Summer enters, and she's trying to console Marissa. Marissa's like, "I can't believe I slept with him." And then Summer's like, "I'm going to call Ryan and Seth." And she's like, Marissa's like, "Don't call them. I'm so embarrassed." Summer's like, "Let's go home." Marissa's like, my dad will be gone, and my mom will be back." Marissa says, "I have no one." And Summer's sitting right there. I mean,
Summer knows what she means, though.
But yeah, you're right.
It is like they do a good job with building up to this moment in the series.
Yeah,
like it's not Marissa that I really loved in this moment. It's just the show. I was like, oh, they've done a great job with story arc to get us to this point.
Yes, we've established what an idiot Jimmy is. The fact that he's kind of like, he's an idiot, but Marissa loves him, and he's a good dad to her. Julie, insufferable. Just the worst mom.
Neither have really been there for her since the start of the show. Like, yes, it's established that she has a good relationship with her parents, with her dad in particular, but like, we haven't really got, like, since any issue she's had within the show, it's like bringing it up at all, and Jimmy's just like got his own fucking shit to deal with, and her mom is fucking Julie.
Yeah.
They've been isolating her in that way, you know, in a good way, and then we've established she can't really talk to Summer about these things, probably because of herself more than because of Summer.
Yeah.
And then Luke's whole situation and Ryan's situation, like, it's been a nice progress to get just to this point.
Yeah, it feels believable. Marissa's kind of breakdown right now. So Summer's like, "Let's go, come on." And then she hands Marissa a tissue, like, out of her purse. And Marissa kind of spots the painkillers that Summer bought for her stepmom. And then Summer goes to the bathroom to, I guess, like, kind of like collect things. And she's like calling. She calls the boys. She calls Seth.
This is, and we've brought this up before, but this is 2003 when, like, because she closes the door to the bathroom so that she can call Ryan and that Marissa won't hear her.
Right.
Whereas, like, if now, you would just send a text message real fast, text it. Yeah, and you wouldn't have to close the door. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's such a, because, I mean, how we were saying, like, how it's a snapshot of that time was, she probably didn't think, "I'll just text them."
I didn't even think about that, but you're right. And I did think, like, oh, maybe she just shouldn't have called them in that moment. Because I was like, leaving her and closing the door even in that moment, like, obviously she couldn't have predicted what would happen, but I was like, you maybe should have just stayed with your friend.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Like, you're right. Like, the move now would be like quick text, you know?
Shoot him a text.
No, she's, we're at hotel. That's it.
Yeah. She here. She here. Get here. So yeah, she calls Seth, tells him to get to the hotel fast. She's like, "Marissa, let's get some dinner," whatever. And Marissa, Coop, where are you, Coop? She's gone. She took the pills and she went off into the night. Marissa is gone. So now we cut to the streets of Tijuana with Summer, Seth, and Ryan. So they all meet up on the streets outside the hotel. There's like a million. I feel you here, Muhammad. There's like a million people here.
It's horrifying.
It is packed.
It's like the last part of this episode is so legit horrifying.
Yeah.
It feels almost like a child abduction movie or something, or like Taken or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
I wrote it down.
Super like sweaty and like anxiety inducing. You did.
In quotes. Sure did.
But yeah, it's, and then like later on, and we'll get to it, but there's like, it just gets even more intense where you're just like, I think she's gonna die. Like it just feels, it feels like something bad's going to happen, and it does.
Oh, but. Yeah. So they meet out on the streets and they're looking for Marissa, and Summer's like, she took the painkillers. Should we split up? And Ryan says, no, let's stick together. I feel like this is the opposite of what they should have done. You think it's a good call?
Oh! So I was like, good call.
I think what they should have done is the opposite. I think they should have left Boom Booms and everybody goes back to the hotel. Because that's probably where Marissa is.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
now that Marissa...
It did seem stupid to split up the first time,
Sure. And now that Marissa is like going rogue into the night... That's when you got to split up, because it's more urgent that like one person finds her right now.
I mean, I hear you. Especially if she's got the pills.
She's got the pills.
This is kind of an emergency situation. I do feel like in general, teenagers in Tijuana at night on the streets, sticking together is probably the best idea.
In general, yeah.
Like, you do have one out there and she's the most vulnerable, so you need to find her.
Mm-hmm.
But like, man.
But also, I think it's like
the thing, I kept thinking like, oh, they are... They're 16 and 17 years old.
They're children.
Yeah. You're so fucking young.
Yeah.
And like in this crazy city in the middle of the night.
They don't
like,
know. They don't know.
In trouble.
City. Yeah.
In distress, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was because they split up initially.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're like, well, should we split up? And Ryan's like, no. Let's stick together.
That did work out great last time.
That's what we should have done.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. That's where his head was at, probably. But it's also so that they could all find Marissa at the same time.
Right.
They could script plot-wise.
Right.
So there's a... I thought this was a nice kind of crane out to the streets of Tijuana where you just see, like, needle in a haystack. Like, where the fuck could Marissa be? There's so many people here. And Marissa somehow found the one bar in Tijuana... that nobody is in. And she found it immediately. Like, she left the hotel room, and it's probably just
I
a
was thinking,
few
like,
doors
it must
down.
Must have been, like, on the same block as the hotel.
Yeah, and yet,
like right next door.
No, but why is nobody in this bar? This is Tijuana. There's a million people.
She went
people.
To, like, the one skeezy bar where no Americans are, where no kids are.
Yeah. I just imagine, like, a group of, like, drunk frat kids, like, walk in there, and they're just like, hey, let's get some shot. Oh, you know what? I'm not really feeling Never this mind. Bar. They're not playing the Chemical Brothers. Let's go to Boom Booms.
Those two guys in the booth kind of, like, glare over at them, and they're like, maybe not.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get out of here.
I want to get to those guys in the booth, because they get a lot of screen time. So, yeah.
They sure do. Like, a weird amount.
Yeah. So, Marissa's in the bar by herself, and, yeah, how's this bar empty? She's super sweaty. She has, like, cuts on her forearm. Did you notice that?
Yeah. She's, like, I assume, like, falling around. Like, she starts getting real stumbly in the bar, but I just had to assume she was
just, like,
stumbling.
Scraping it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, she must have taken the pills and... immediately felt the effects.
Well,
she takes a handful of them in the scene.
Yeah, the bartender gives her like some tequila and he's just like, I'm out of here. I don't want to deal with your shit.
Well, he's thinking what we're all thinking. This woman's about to be sex trafficked.
Maybe that's why nobody goes to that
get
bar.
Get out of here and let the sex traffickers do their thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's why I think those guys got a lot of airtime, was to kind of make you assume something like that was about to happen.
I'm just giving him the benefit of the doubt. I was like, I thought they wanted to help her.
I thought it looks like a scary guy,
like big guy, like walking up to her. And then I was really hoping it would just cut to him being like, are you okay, ma'am? Like,
I thought the exact same thing. Like the best version of this, he's like, ma'am, can I call somebody for you? Do you need some help?
Yeah. Take you to a hospital.
It's like, definitely overkill with how much. it's overkill with how much they show those guys in a creepy light, like to the point that it's like cheesy. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, they could have just been there looking at her, and we could have got the idea that, oh, this is an unsafe place.
Right.
Or at least, like, this is sketchy. You know
at
what
least
I mean?
To Marissa,
the way they
from
kept,
Marissa's
like, cutting
perspective.
To them looking menacing, I was like, all right.
I think that was a bit of, like, Marissa's POV, like, how she viewed these men. And less how they actually were, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, she takes a ton of painkillers with the tequila. And then we cut to the Cohen's kitchen with Kirsten. And I don't really care. I don't really give a shit at this point. But anyway, Sandy enters. Kirsten says, I can't believe summer's over. I'm like, what do you care? You're adults. Like, what the fuck does summer mean when you're an adult?
Do you even know what season we're in right now? Because I think it's summer, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, who knows? Who the fuck knows? Yeah, especially with global warming, like, go figure. Anyway, this whole scene exists
the season
just for
is Wednesday.
Sandy to be like, I took the job. I took the fucking job. Whatever. Who cares? Back to Tijuana.
Let's get out of this story.
I
Shazammed and I forget. I should have written it down.
I wrote it down.
But the song that's playing, it starts playing like while she's in the bar, and it like carries on throughout the when she's like stumbling into the night.
Oh yeah, it's like a weird spoken word.
Yeah, and jazz. I can't imagine ever like listening to that in any circumstance. But it's fucking perfect.
It
for
is.
This scene.
It's like menacing.
It really I didn't look it up, but it, and I'm sure it's not him. But it reminded me of like Gil Scott Heron or Heron or whatever, however his name is.
Yeah,
some of that like. Yeah, like poetry with beats underneath it kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
It was like super creepy. It was a good track, but it's like for that scene and not for much else.
Yeah.
That song is called Going Under, and then in parentheses, Evil Love and Insanity Dub, in parentheses, by Rockers Hi-Fi.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So it makes me think that it was
this Rockers Hi-Fi.
Yeah, it's some kind of like remix or something of some weird like industrial techno song or something. Yeah, I don't know. Sense. But yeah, it is like eerily fitting perfectly in this scene, in this kind of like this desperate kind of like hazy drugged out Tijuana. So the kids are looking for Marissa. No luck. Marissa is losing it at the bar. Like, painkillers are kicking in. She's super drunk. She's super sad. And this is where we see those locals kind of like blankly, you know, staring at her. One gets up to approach her and she just like runs out of the bar and she's in the streets and she's all fucked up and she's like dry heaving and like, people are just kind of walking by, just like, party, Tijuana, what's wrong with her? And like, it's like terrifying. And she like finds like an empty alleyway and lands right under a spotlight, thankfully. so we can see her. And then
maybe that was good just forethinking on her part.
Yeah. Like, hopefully,
her friends are probably going to be looking here. For me.
Yeah. I won't go in the shadows.
What if, like, during that scene, Misha Barton's like, now where do I fall? And he's like, and Josh Schwartz is like, right over there. And she's like, where? And he's just like, puts a spotlight on. He's like, right there.
Where the light is. Oh, got it. So she like, passes out under this light in this alley. And then, thank God, the kids find her. Ryan runs over to her. And then we get a reprise, a musical callback of Into Dust by Mazzy Star, which is like one of their songs from like episode one or two. I feel
one.
Like.
Oh, really?
We were I didn't realize. We were saying that Hallelujah. I said it maybe prematurely. I was like, that's their song. Like, it plays a lot.
Yeah.
But I think this one plays just as much as that one in terms of like scenes with the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess they have two songs. This is kind of selfish, but
this is their sad song.
There's a lot of great musical tracks, fitting musical tracks in this episode. We had Death Cab in the Car.
Yeah.
We had Chemical Brothers at Boom Boom. We had that
going under Evil Love and Insanity dub.
Yeah. But this Mazzy Star song at the end was the best.
It hits hard. It's so good.
It was just it's so fitting.
Yeah.
Because he picks her up, which he did in the pilot episode. Remember when she's like passed out on her
in
the front door and he picks her up and he takes her. And a little bit of foreshadowing, but I already told you this happens, Muhammad. He picks her up at the end of season three when she dies in the car crash and walks.
In a car crash? Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah, so
anticlimactic.
No, it'll still, because I rewatched
that's
it
like,
recently.
Okay, here's if anybody does want to know spoilers for Downton Abbey, skip about a minute. Have you guys care if I spoil something?
What are you talking about, Matthew Crowley?
Yeah.
Yeah, we watch that.
His car crash. I love that show, by the way. But main character of the show, it's Dan Stevens, who went on to play Legion.
Yeah, great actor.
Like, survives the fucking war. Yep. Like, does all it, like, he's like, he comes back with a limp. He almost dies. He makes it through. But then, you know, he got better work. So, like, at the beginning of season three, he's just like driving a car to go visit his wife and new baby and just drives off the road, crashes, and dies. And I was just like, what the fuck? I didn't know it was going to happen. I was just
Was Rachel Bilson sitting in the front seat and she reaches over and grabs the steering wheel?
He was like, you're being proper rude. I'm going to drop you off on the side of this road. She's like, the hell you are. Dude, yeah,
70 kilometers is the new 80 kilometers.
they just ripped them off.
I actually don't mind that. Like, if a character has to exit a show, I don't care. Like, just fucking kill them. That's fine.
Well, that was
in like the most whatever way. It really doesn't matter. It's almost better than like trying to find an excuse to, I mean, for a drama at least, and then trying to find an excuse for them to be gone for the next forever. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that was, by the time we get to this episode, it's in season three, so I got some time. So I'll do more research. But I feel like at the time when it happened, I remember hearing that Misha Barton was having some disputes with her contract. And I guess they couldn't come to an agreement. And so they were like, I'm just going to kill her.
See you later.
You kill think her we character, need you? Not kill her. She's alive and well.
Yeah.
But it was a really good scene. I did think that Summer and Seth's reactions were a little low.
Yeah,
for finding their friend OD'd in the alley.
How did they react?
Ryan,
let's watch it.
Cried into Seth's arm.
Yeah, but Ryan runs to her, which they should all do. And like,
I think they were like,
sees if she's okay. We're gonna let tries to save her.
We're gonna let Ryan have this one. They're like, yeah. He can pick her up. It's fine.
Yeah, I guess maybe just like a little bit more shock. I mean, Seth looks okay. Seth looks a little. I just assume, knowing what we know about Summer, that she would be the one to run over there.
Yeah,
she's crying.
They're best friends. She's like.
But you're right. They don't go over there. Just Ryan.
They don't go over. They're kind of standing back. Look at her. She's just like, what? What's happening?
She's like, oh my god. She okay?
Like, that's fucking your best friend.
Okay, now it's there. Oh, she goes.
She covers her face. That's what she does. She's like, oh no,
Seth's shoulder, and then.
I mean, I guess maybe they just assume she's dead. Although then you would like freak out even more. I don't know what they're doing here, but it is it's a very pretty scene.
This is an iconic moment really for this show. Yeah,
dude.
Yeah,
sweaty, hot in Tijuana.
so sweaty in Tijuana.
Like, what is Summer thinking there? Does she think that...
What is Ryan thinking there?
Marissa's dead?
Ryan's just standing there holding her.
I mean, she looks...
Yeah, I guess all of them are kind of just like...
dead.
Yeah, they must just assume she's dead and, like, be, like, processing their feelings in that moment for their
dead
friend.
Shock, man. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, that's where the episode ends.
That's episode 7, The Escape.
I was very frustrated. I still have not watched the next episode because I watched them in time with the podcast.
I applaud your
restraint.
Your restraint that you're showing, because I, having already watched this numerous times, immediately watched the next episode. I'm just like,
it's
I'm
hard
not ending
to.
It on that.
Well,
note.
I thought about it, but I did that once where I watched like the episode and then, you know, to listen to whatever podcast episode it related to. But in that same viewing, I went ahead and watched the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
So then when the next week came out and that podcast came out, I preferred watching it closer and I wasn't going to rewatch it.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just me as a fan of the show being like, I'm going to wait until like the day before the episode comes out to watch the episode, you know?
Oh, thanks, man. Well, you don't have to do that for this one because you're on it, baby.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, Muhammad. This was a lot of fun. This might be our longest episode ever. We just get longer every week.
Well, you know, when you got
this was a big one. This
one. Loud mouth like me.
No problems, man. It's all good. Thank you guys for listening. If you'd like to email us, you can at janmitchellstheocpodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to follow us on Instagram, I guess we just have our individual Instagrams. I'm at Mitchell Hardage, H-A-R-D-A-G-E. Jay?
I'm at Jay the Instagram. Muhammad, do you want to promote anything?
Just, you know, my Instagram is at Hammy Cakes, and everything I do is pretty well connected to that. But yeah, we do have My High School iPod that me and Jay Howell host, and Let's Make a Podcast with Muhammad T. Joma and Friends. Both podcasts are available anywhere you get podcasts if you want to hear some more of me and a little bit of Jay too. And Mitchell's on a bunch of episodes, so we're all there. So check us out.
We just like to hang out and talk about different
topics.
They're
a little bit shorter than this. What we just did
here.
Yeah,
I always thought that Let's Make a Pod, or My High School iPod was a little long-winded, and these three-hour episodes make me feel a lot better.
Glad we could do that for you.
Muhammad, I'm so glad you got to come and do this, and we'll have to have you on for some more
episodes. Yeah, you got plenty of episodes. I'd love to do a bunch.
Hell yeah.
It makes me happy. Honestly, you and I, like you said, we've been friends for a long time, and I kind of thought when we started doing this podcast and you were like, I started listening to your OC podcast, that you were going to just shit all over it and tell me how much you didn't like the OC. And so I was kind of nervous, but I'm glad that you're enjoying it.
Well, and you know how much I love shitting all over things. So you know, I'm actually enjoying it.
But yeah, man, this was really fun. Thanks for doing it.
Thanks for having me.
Until next episode, we'll see ya next time.
Hey.
I prefer the old ending, just for the record.
Nope. This is the ending now.
California.
Thanks, guys. Take care of yourselves and each other. Keep protesting, keep donating, keep educating yourselves, and keep talking to people. Love you. Take care. Bye.
This podcast is a Kitty Wing production.